जयं शुपादपरमहंसपरिव्राजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तरशतश्री श्रीमान् अभयचरणारविन्द भक्तिवेदान्तगोस्वामी महाराज श्रीलप्रभुपादिकि जयं नित्यलीलाप्रविष्टविष्णुपादपरमहंसपरिव्राजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तरशतश्री श्रीमान् भक्तिसिद्धान्तसरस्वती महाराज श्रीलप्रभुपादिकि आनन्दकोटि वैष्णववृन्दकि नामाचार्यशील हरिदास ठाकूर्कि प्रयं सहो श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्दश्री अद्वैत गदाधार ശ്രീവാസാദിഗൗര ഭക്തവൃന്ദക്കി ശ്രീ ശ്രീ രാധാകൃഷ്ണ ഗോപഗോപിനാഥ ശ്യാമകുണ്ട രാധാകുണ്ഡഗിരി ഗോവർദ്ധാനിക്ക് വൃന്ദാവൻ ധാമിക്ക് മായപ്പൂർ ധാമിക്ക് മധുരപുരി ധാമിക്ക് ജഗന്നാഥ്പുരി ധാമിക്ക് ദ്വാരകാപുരി ധാമിക്ക് ഗംഗമായിക്ക് യമുനമായിക്ക് തുളസിദേവിക്ക് ഭക്തിദേവിക്ക് സാമവേദ ഭക്തവൃന്ദക്ക് ഗൗർ പ്രേമാനന്ദി ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറീസ് ടു ദി അസംബ്ലിഡ് ഡിവോട്ടീസ് ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറീസ് ടു ദി അസംബ്ലിഡ് ഡിവോട്ടീസ് ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറീസ് ടു ദി അസംബ്ലിഡ് ഡിവോട്ടീസ് all glories to Shri Shri Guru and Shri Gauranga, all glories to Srila Prabhupada, Namami Shubhadaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale, Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swaminiti Namine, Namaste Saraswati Devim Gauravani Prajarine, Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschati Deshadharine. ॐ अज्ञानतिमिरान्धस्य ज्ञानाञ्जनशलाघया चक्षुरुन्मिलितां येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टां स्थापितां येन भूतले स्वयं रूपकदा मह्यं ददाति स्वपदान्दियं वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरु श्रीयुतापदकमलं श्रीगुरुं वैष्णवांश्च ശ്രീരൂപം സാഗ്രജാതം സഹഗണരഘുനാഥാൻവിതം തം സജീവം സാദ്വൈതം സാവധൂതം പരിജനാസഹിതം കൃഷ്ണചൈതന്യദേവം ശ്രീരാധാകൃഷ്ണപദാൻ സഹഗണലളിതാം ശ്രീവിശാഖാൻവിതാംശ്ച നമാവും വിഷ്ണുപദായ കൃഷ്ണപ്രസ്ഥായ ഭൂതലെ ശ്രീമതീ ഭക്തിവേദാന്തസ്വാമിൻ ഇതി നാമിനേ നമസ്തേ സരസ്വതി ദേവേ ഗൗരവാണി പ്രചാരിണി നിർവിശേഷ ശൂന്യവാദി പാശ്ചാത്യദേശദാരിണി നമാവും വിഷ്ണുപദായ കൃഷ്ണപ്രസ്ഥായ ഭൂതലെ ശ്രീമതി ഭക്തിസിദ്ധാന്ത സരസ്വതി നാമിനി ശ്രീവർഷഭാനവി ദേവി ദൈതായ കൃപാബ്ദയേ കൃഷ്ണസംബന്ധ വിജ്ഞാനം ദായിനേ പ്രഭവേ നമഃ മാധുര്യോജ്വല പ്രേമാദ്യ ശ്രീരൂപാനുഗഭക്തിദ ശ്രീഗൗരകരുണാശക്തി വിഗ്രഹായ നമോസ്തുതേ സ്തേ ഗൗരവാണി ശ്രീ മൂർത്തയേ ദീനധാരിണേ രൂപാനുഗവിരുദ്ധാപസിദ്ധാന്തദ്വന്ദ്വഹാരിണേ നമോ ഗൗരകിശോരായ സാക്ഷാദ് വൈരാഗ്യമൂർത്തയേ വിപ്രലംബരസാംബോധേ പാദാംബുജായതേ നമഃ നമോ ഭക്തിവിനോദായ സച്ചിദാനന്ദനാമിനി ഗൗരശക്തിസ്വരൂപായ രൂപനൂഗവരായ ദേ ഗൗരാവിർഭവഭൂമേ സ്വം നിർദ്ദോഷ്ടാ സജ്ജനപ്രിയാഃ വൈഷ്ണവസാർവഭൗമ ശ്രീ ജഗന്നാഥായ ദേ നമഃ വാഞ്ചകൽപതരുഭ്യശ്ച കൃപാസിന്ധുഭ്യേവ ച പതിതാനാം പാവനേഭ്യോ വൈഷ്ണവേഭ്യോ നമോ നമഃ ഭാവദാന്യായ കൃഷ്ണ പ്രേമ പ്രദായതേ കൃഷ്ണായ കൃഷ്ണ ചൈതന്യനാമ്നി ഗൗരത്വശ്രീ നമ പഞ്ചതത്വാത്മകം കൃഷ്ണം ഭക്തരൂപസ്വരൂപകം ഭക്താവതാരം ഭക്താഖ്യം നമാമി ഭക്തശാക്തികം ഹേ കൃഷ്ണകരുണ സിന്ധു ദീനബന്ധോ ജഗൽപദേ ഗോപേശ ഗോപികാകാന്ത രാധാകാന്ത നമോസ്തുതേ ജയതാം സുരതോപാംഗോർ മമ മന്ദമതേർഗതി മത്സർവസ്വദാംബോജൌ രാധാ മദനമോഹനവും വൃന്ദാരണ്യകൽപദ്രുമാദ ശ്രീമന്ദ്രത്നാകര സിംഹാസനസ്ഥൗ ശ്രീമന്ദ്രാധാ ശ്രീലഗോവിന്ദദേവൗ പ്രഷ്ടാളിഭിഃ സേവ്യമാനൗ സ്മരാമി രാസരസാരംഭി വംശീ വടതടസ്ഥിതാഃ കൃഷ്ണൻ വേണുസ്വനീർ ഗോപീർ ഗോപിനാഥാശ്രിയേ സ്തുനാഹ కాంచన గౌరాంగీ రాధే వృందావనేశ్వరి వృషభానుసుది దేవి ప్రణమామి హరిప్రియే జయ శ్రీకృష్ణ చైతన్య ప్రభో నిత్యానంద శ్రీ అద్వైత గదాధార శ్రీవాసాది గౌర భక్తవృంద హరే కృష్ణ 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 హరే 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 రామ హరే రామ 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 హరే 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 కృష్ణ కృష్ణ హరే 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 రామ 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 హరే 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 కృష్ణ 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 హరే 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 రామ 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 హరే హరే ఓం పార్థాయ ప్రతిబోధితాం భగవతా నారాయణేన స్వయం వ్యాసేన గ్రథితాం పురాణమునినాం మధ్యే మహాభారతం అద్వైతామృతవర్షిణీం భగవతీం అష్టాదశాధ్యాయినీం అంబ త్వామనుసంధదామి భగవద్గీతే భవద్వేషిణీం నమోస్తు వ్యాస విశాలబుద్ధే పుల్లారవిందాయతపత్రనేత్ర యేన త్వయా భారత తైలపూర్ణ ప్రజ్వాలితో జ్ఞానమయ ప్రదీపా ప్రపన్న వారిజాదాయ తోత్రవేత్రైకబాణయే జ్ఞానముద్రాయ కృష్ణాయ గీతామృతదుహే నమః సర్వోపనిషదో గావో దుగ్ధా గోపాలనందన పార్థో వల్స సుదీర్భోక్తా దుగ్ధం గీతామృతం మహత్ వసుదేవసుదం దేవం కంసచాణూరమర్దనం దేవకీ పరమానందం కృష్ణం వందే జగద్గురుం భీష్మద్రోణదటాచయద్రతజలా గాంధారనీలోల్పల శల్యగ్రాహవదీ కృపేణ వహనీ కర్ణేన వేలాకుల అశ్వత్థామవికర్ణఘోరమకరా దుర్యోధనావర్తిని సోత్తీర్ణ ఖలు పాండవైరణనదీ కైవర్తక కేశవాం పారాశర్యవచసరోజమమలం గీతార్థగంధోల్కటం నానాఖ్యానగకేసరం హరికథా సంబోధనాభోదితం లోకే సజ్జనషల్పదైరహరః పేబీయమానం ముదా భూయాద్భారతపంగజం కలిమలప్రధ్వంసినశ్రేయసే కరోతి వాచాలం పంగుం లంఘయదే గిరిం యల్కృపాతమహం వందే పరమానందమాధవం యం బ్రహ్మా వరుణేంద్రరుద్రమరుదస్త్వన్వంది దివ్యైస్తవైర్వేదై సాంగపదక్రమోపనిషదైర్గాయంతి యం సామగాః ధ్యానావస్థితద్గదేన మనసా పశ్యంతి యం యోగినో యస్యాందం న విదుఃసురాసురగణై దేవాయ తస్మై నమః Today we'll begin with chapter 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita which is Kshetra Kshetrajna Vibhaga Yogam. I think that is the title which is called addressed here as Nature, the Enjoyer and Consciousness. You can see from the title itself, it is related to consciousness. This chapter is important chapter in the sense that as you go through the first 12 chapters, the 6 chapters related to karmam, and the next 6 chapters related to bhakti, by now we would see that Bhagavad Gita has a important message to us, which is that how that connection with the body, what we feel in ourselves, we feel a very strong connection with our own body, isn't it? that gets a little bit loosened up. That you start realizing that the body is something separate from us. This is the important thing. All along, when we start Bhagavad Gita first time, we are thinking we are this body. It is full identification with the body. We start studying Bhagavad Gita. But as you progress further, by this 12th chapter, you will more or less come to understand that I am separated from the body. Not at least on intellectual level, if not on a total realization level. At least these thoughts will start coming up in us that, have I got something to do with this body? What is this, my connection with this body? This thought has to come up, because that is what all these 12 chapters Krishna has been trying to point out to us. But from now on, from this 13th chapter onwards, what you see there is that a person who has come to some extent from the body, he starts entering into the spiritual world and seeing that the amazing picture of the soul and the soul's activities and soul's reality, and that alone is the reality. This understanding comes. Up this point in time, when the 12 chapters when you study, you have more or less understood that I have something, nothing to do with this body. If you have closely followed the Bhagavad Gita, you will have that thought coming inside, that I have nothing to do with this body. But then, what is my real function, in what is my constitution? And that subject is being discussed from now on. That means practically the consciousness, in other words. Consciousness is the most important thing for us, not the body. Body is something has come, it will go. It has no permanent existence. And it has also no reality. But in a conditioned stage, it is difficult to accept. We think body is important. But somebody is telling us inside, body is not important. This is the thing. Externally, we'll tell others that, yes, we'll ask, how are you? I'm fine. You are also fine. Everybody is fine. But that's all in relationship with the body, isn't it? But once you come free yourself from that concept inside, Krishna is telling us from inside that you have nothing to do with that body. Nothing to do with the body. Just like we say, I'm not this body, and the body is not mine. Body is not for my enjoyment. This thing, any amount of time if you repeat yourself with inside, and you get situated in that state, that body, it will come, it will go. Body will have its problems. Body will go through birth and death. Body will get old. Body will die. Body will get diseased. All these kinds of things you will start seeing in a different way. Normally, when we get sick, we get immediately absorbed in the body, isn't it? Body disturbs us when something goes wrong with the body. But actually, Krishna is going to tell us from now on that you got to come out of that completely and stay in the platform of the soul. There is no other way. That is spiritual life. So, the one thing Krishna mentioned in the Bhagavadam and in many other places also, all the great devotees, they've all said that the best option for our benefit in spiritual life is satsangam. Always be in contact with the sat. So, what does that mean? Satsanga means contact with Krishna. Contact with Krishna. Krishna means the soul. Always in contact with the soul. In other words, the realization of the self. Realization of the self, or realization of Krishna, or Atma. With different names in the Shastram. Atma Anubhuti, Ishara Anubhuti. So many things they have given. But practically all it means is Sangam with the Sat. Sat is the soul. Sangam with the Sat. Because Satsangam is that thing which makes you experience of what really exists. What really exists is only the soul. That is why it's called Satsangam. That means what really exists, really what exists, which is the Sat, making that to experience is Satsangam. It is not a person. It is not a book. Making, experiencing that what really exists, that is satsangam. So, in other words, the whole essence of Bhagavad Gita is covered in the satsangam. Covered in the, that is what satsangam does. And what is, that is what Krishna is also doing with Arjuna. As soon as Arjuna and Krishna met up with each other and started talking, satsangam happened there. Is it not? And that satsangam, what you have seen there, is the satsangam of making Arjuna aware of what the reality is. Reality is only the soul, nothing else. And that is the point. So, after the satsangam happens, then after that, there is no Arjuna, there is no Krishna there. There is no Krishna here. There is no speaker, there is no listener there. All what exists is that Sat, the soul, that is. And that thing what exists, that is what we call it as Sat, or what is addressed as consciousness, or what is addressed as Brahman, all that thing, or Atma, or Bhagavan, whatever you may call it, what exists is that pure consciousness. And it is that pure consciousness that is being discussed. There is no speaker, there is no listener. What is going on there, then on, is the experience of that Sat, which is the soul. So, somebody will call that as Ishvara, somebody will call it as Brahman, someone will say call it as Atma, another person will call it as Bhagavan. Whichever way you may address it, it does not matter. But that anubhuti, that experience of that, and if it is experienced, you can say that at that place there is Sangam. If you are experiencing that Sat, there is Sangam. That is the main thing. So Satsangam, generally people advertise Satsangam. And they say there's Satsangam, this Satsangam, that. No, and people misunderstand that. Satsangam means with a person. Actually it is not. The experience of the Sat, the soul inside, which is pure consciousness, when we have an anubhuti of experience, that is satsangam. So satsangam can happen anywhere at any situation. So therefore, if you do not get satsangam, Ramachandra says this in the Yoga Vasishtam, it says here, at least if you are not getting satsangam, do not get dulsangam. The opposite of that. That is, if you can't get satsangam, go and sleep. He says, but don't get dusangam. Dusangam means gone. Then it is very difficult to claw it back again into spiritual life. So that is why you will see that Mujugunda said this, isn't it, to Krishna. What did he say to him? He is sleeping in the cave and Krishna goes and wakes him up and gives darshan to him. So, in the Bhagavatam, you know that story which we have discussed. We don't have to discuss that in detail because you have spoken about it before also. So, a king, a great personality, Mujgunda, he went and slept in the cave and Krishna comes and gives him darshan there. At that time, Mujgunda says to him that that particular verse is important, what Mujgunda said to him. This is where you see the experience of these great personalities. When they speak, sometimes it will throw some light into their realizations. If you look into that 51st chapter in the 10th canto, there is a verse there, what he said to Krishna. Bhavabhavargo brahmado yadha bhavel janasya tarhyachyuta sal samagamaha sal sangamo yarhi tadaiva sadgado paravareshatvai jayate mati. That's an important verse in the Mujgunda Stuti, Mujgunda's prayers. It's a very important verse. Mujgunda is saying to Krishna, Bhavabhavargo brahmado yadha bhaved janasya tarhi achyuta sal samagamaha sal sangamo yarhi tadaiva salgado paravareshatvai jayate mati. This is Mujgunda says to him that Bhavabhavarga means dying, taking birth, this process. And what else? Eating, sleeping. This is all what goes on here, isn't it? Whole 70-80 years when we have a body, we eat and sleep.
and then death, and then again take birth, and again eating, sleeping, death, taking birth again. This cycle. That is what called bhavabhavanam. So one man who is caught up in that, he has no time to give attention to what really exists. He is going through this process of eating, sleeping, death, again birth, eating, sleeping, death, again birth. So this cycle is going on. He has no time to give attention to what really exists, isn't it? So when you do not give attention to what really exists, but you are caught up in this cycle, it is called samsaram. That's addressed as samsaram, material existence. Simply caught up in eating, sleeping, birth and death, and again eating, sleeping, birth and death. This process continuously rotating all the time through that, but unable to give importance or attention to the vastu, what is inside, that is Krishna who is inside, or Atma, or Pratyabhijna, whatever we call that, different words in the Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita, ultimately that is the vastu, what really exists. No time to give attention to that, but I got a time for everything else in this world. And that is what is called samsaram. Because what you have really in experience, that is more important. What is really in experience? There are two things here. One, what is in your experience? And the other one, what you are perceiving in this world. They have talked about this before also. What is, one is in experience, anubhavam, and the other one is perception, which is pratiti, as they call it as pratiti, isn't it? So, normally we mix these two things together, and that's how we speak all the time. When we discuss with people, when we talk about different things to different people, we'll mix these two things, experience, anubhavam, and pratiti. Experience and perception, we mix it together. Normally we don't separate them. We always we misunderstand pratiti as perception as experience, or experience as perception, or perception as experience. Either way, it gets mixed up, isn't it? So, what we see, we call it as truth. What we see, we call it as truth. And what we don't see, we say like this. What we see, we say, call it as truth. And what we are experiencing, we are saying we are not seeing it, we can't see it. Think about that. What we see, we say like this, we see, call that as the truth. That's our normal state, isn't it? What we see, we call it as the truth. And what we are experiencing, we are saying we can't see it. Is it not? The awareness, consciousness of the soul, which we are experiencing all the time, we say we can't see it. We say like that. We can't see it. We don't know. But what we see, we say, oh, it's all the truth. Because I can see it, therefore it's the truth. That's where all the problem happens. So, because we are not seeing it, therefore we are saying like that. So, therefore some people called it as false, the soul. It is as soul. Some people believe that it does exist. Some people believe that it exists. So what you see is one thing. What you see is one thing, but what you are experiencing is another thing. Isn't it? Quietly reflect on that. Quickly reflect on that. You will see this. What you see is one thing, what you are experiencing is another thing. Seeing and experiencing has no contact, no connections between the two. But normally we mix it and always present it that way. Oh, I've seen that, you will say, as though you experienced it. You only seen it. But in experience it is not there. Experience, you have only one thing, awareness or consciousness, isn't it? So, that itself is a very important principle in this chapter to understand, because
Without these basics being not clear, you'll find that a little bit difficult otherwise. That what you experience, what you see, you are not experiencing. What you are experiencing, you are not seeing. Pratiti and anubhava, in other words. One thing is, whatever you are experiencing, you are not going to see it. This also you have to remember. What you are experiencing, you are not going to see it. And what you are seeing will never be your experience. You know, what you are seeing is not going to be experienced at any time. And what you are experiencing something, you are not going to see it any time. There is a very clear, marked difference between experiencing and seeing. Because we mix these two things together all the time, we have a big problem there, because that's where we get confused about everything, isn't it? So what you are seeing, it's called pratiti, and what you are experiencing, which is anubhavam, and that is called sat. Sat is called, that is the sat. So the nature of sat is experience. Nature of sat is experience. And nature of pratiti is seeing. Nature of pratiti is seeing. Even our big scientists also have no clue these things. Very sort of shocking actually, that in the name of science they are propagating and leading people into a different understanding. But these very subtle things within the body, what's going on, they haven't got a proper grip on that. Otherwise, although these such big intelligent people sitting in big, big institutions and doing so much research work, this very fundamental of the Vedic conclusions, they haven't come to realize it yet. So, pratiti, that is, the nature of that is seeing or perception, in other words. Very easy, that is. That is very easy. Which one? Perception. Because eyes can see, nose can smell, skin can touch. When we see seeing, not only seeing with the eyes, all the five senses. Because seeing is one of the most important things we take very seriously, it's spoken like that. What it means is seeing, hearing, smelling, touching, tasting, all of them included in that. Pratiti, perception in other words. So, anubhuti or experiencing something is never can come under the influence of senses. That's important. Anubhuti or experience, what we call as experience, cannot be brought under the control of senses. Senses can do these five things, that's all. Anubhuti cannot come in senses, through the senses. And experience is not sensory. Experience is not sensory. So it's not sensory. So anubhuti means this experience. Anubhuti is the right word actually. Sometimes we say anubhavam. But anubhuti is the word in the Vedantam and Shastram, everything it is anubhuti. Anubhuti. Anubhuti cannot be known or experienced through mind or through senses. Mind or senses cannot get hold of anubhuti. Cannot get anubhuti. So, whatever you are getting through your senses and through your mind, none of them is anubhuti. None of them is anubhuti. And whatever you get through mind or senses, none of them is anubhuti. That is very important. That's very important. You know, this misunderstanding in every one of us, isn't it? Just like even in the court, when suppose you committed a murder, and in the court, you are still talking about senses. You are not talking about the anubhuti, isn't it? There you are also giving based on the perception that you are reporting something. On the perception, the judge is making the decision. On the basis of perception, the advocates or lawyers or the case, court cases. It's all based on perception. All based on perception. Nothing is based on anubhuti. Nothing is based on anubhuti. For example, say I'm sitting here, I'm seeing few people sitting now here. But I can only say that I am seeing them. I can only say I am seeing them. I can't say I am experiencing them. Isn't it? I am experiencing them. Similarly, when you see, say if you happen to see Lord Shiva or Lord Vishnu also, you can only say, I have seen Vishnu, I have seen Shiva. But you have not experienced Vishnu, you have not experienced Shiva. It's two different. That's why it is not given much importance in the Vedic way that you have seen a form and the form has gone afterwards, because it is still in the platform of pratiti, not in anubhuti level. Only in the anubhuti level it has some importance. Pratiti level, whatever it is, some form, suppose you had darshan of something and afterwards the darshanam has finished and God, Shiva or Vishnu, where it has disappeared. And then that means it was only a pratiti, not an anubhavam, Shiva or Vishnu. So in order to see others, I need the eyes. Only then I can see, isn't it? To see, I need the eyes. Suppose my experience of you is dependent on my eyes. Suppose if I don't have the eyes, I don't know whether you are existing or not. Is it not? I won't know whether you are existing or not. Otherwise, I have to touch and feel if somebody is present here. So, when you are seeing through the... when you are touching somebody, that is seeing the person through the skin. Seeing a person through the skin is touching. Hearing the sound of a person is seeing through the ears. Hearing the sound of a person is seeing through the ear. So, smelling a person is seeing through the nose. So, the senses are just holes here in the body. Just holes, that's all. The whole thing is happening inside, in the mind. Isn't it? It is from mind the senses are coming out. From mind, senses are coming out. So, seeing through the ears is hearing. And seeing through the nose is tasting, smelling. And seeing through the tongue is tasting. What I'm saying is that when we talk about pratiti, you have to keep all the five senses in that pot. Don't think that only eyes. But when we say, generally say, I will say. Because most of the people refer to things through seeing. We also have a saying, isn't it? Seeing is believing. You have to see yourself, we say. Only then you will believe it. You have to see yourself. So that is embedded inside us, very deeply driven inside the seeing business. And when it comes to the 13th chapter, Krishna says, throw it away, all your so-called seeing and tasting and touching and all this has no value there. Because otherwise, if you don't separate it in the very beginning, they will come and interfere in all the time when you are analyzing something, even in your self-inquiry, it will come and involve itself, the senses. And they will start controlling your thoughts or your understanding, consciousness, everything. So these five things, five senses, Upanishad says that that they are to be kept in its position to that extent. And generally they will say Upanishad Artham. That means Upanishad Artham means in the Upanishad wordings they'll say word or walk. They say walk means the word, power. Then all these five things are covered. All these five senses are covered in that whatever you are speaking through the words. These five things are behind it. Behind the words what you speak in this world. So, in order to know that you are all here, existing, being here, either I have to see through the eye, or I have to hear your voice, noise, or sound, or shabdam, sparsham, rupam, rasam, gandham, isn't it? Sound, touch, form, taste and smell. These five things only what you can see or experience through that, the senses. So, but all these five senses, unless they are functioning, I cannot know of your own presence here. I won't know about your existence, isn't it? Whether you exist or not, I can only know through these five senses. I have no other way of knowing that. So, senses has its way. That is when the mind comes through the senses and experiences the world and goes back again. So, but whether the senses are there or not, I can still have anubhuti. Suppose I have no senses, none of these five senses. Still, anubhuti is possible. Anubhuti is possible. Because only thing is, I will not know anything else apart from me. I'll know about myself. Is it not? It's possible, through anubhuti it is possible for me to know about me. I may not be able to know about others, but about me, I can be conscious of. Is it not? Because awareness is inside me, in me. So, so the only thing you can know through anubhuti is me. And that is why it is called anubhuti. The name of that is knowing about yourself, only about yourself, not about others, is called anubhuti. And knowing about others, what is not known as anubhuti, which is separate from me at the moment it is separate from me, and knowing that is called indriya jnana, sensual sense perception, in other words. Sense perception. Indriya jnanam it is called. Knowing others through the senses. It's called indriya jnanam. So these two things completely different. Anubhuti related to me and me alone. Indriya jnanam related to others. These two things have no connections. They are two separate things. We normally mix them and do our vyavaharam in this world. And therefore we got used to that and we have not ever learned to separate them out. But if we separate it all the time inside, then you will make it a lot easier. This knowledge of the self makes it a lot easier. So, why do we have to say this? Therefore, seeing, hearing, smelling, touching, tasting will never become satsangam. So that point? All the five senses, whatever you are experiencing through the senses is never satsangam. Satsangam is only when you have that experience of the self inside anubhuti. Only that time you can say it is satsangam. Otherwise not. But because these fundamental things are not taken seriously, often people will see it in a different way. Satsangam is, I get 100 people together in a hall, sit together and talk or kirtan, and then satsangam they call it. No, it's not. It only becomes satsangam only if you experience yourself, who you are. That is what makes it satsangam. When you are knowing the sat inside, the essence inside, or that sat inside, what really exists, none of the other things exist. What I see through my eyes is your body. There's no meaning, is there? What I hear is your sound. What I smell is your presence in some form, whatever it is. So all that is asat it is. It's all based on asat is what you are perceiving. Asat is what you are hearing. Asat is what you are experiencing. Sat you are not experiencing. Sat you have to experience inside within yourself, not from outside. It will never come. Outside what you are receiving is all asat. All asat. Therefore, seeing, hearing, smelling, touching, tasting will never become satsangam. Will never become satsangam. So, satsangam, similarly, in satsangam, suppose you have seen me and I have seen you, it's not going to become satsangam. It's not going to become satsangam. Even if you have heard everything what I have said now, it's not satsangam yet. It's not satsangam yet. So, say for example, while sitting here, you have read, you have chanted, and we have, say, flowers are offered, you have smelled the flowers, prasadam is offered, you have taken the prasadam, still it has not become satsangam. It becomes satsangam only when you experience that sat inside. That is when it becomes satsangam. That is the time when you can say you had the satsangam. Only if you experience that sat, what is inside, which is our pure experience inside, anubhuti. When you have that anubhuti, you can call it a satsangam. Nothing else. Per absolute definition of satsangam is like that. Even if you have taken prasadam offered to the deity, it has not become satsangam yet. Even if you have taken the flowers and smelled the deities, still it has not become satsangam. You have heard everything what you are speaking, still it is not satsangam. Still it is not satsangam. And no matter whatever you have done, it's not satsangam till the point comes when you experience that sat inside, then it is satsangam. Otherwise it's not. That is why that word is so important, satsangam. And that is why Krishna talks about that in the 11th canto, in the 12th chapter in detail. Mujugunda is talking about it here, isn't it? Bhavava vargo, he says there, that satsanga sama. Let's look at that words. Bhavava vargo brimado yedha bhave janasya tarhyachuda salsamagamam salsangamo yarhi tadaiva salgado paravareshe tui jayate mati. Very important verse. Arjuna Krishna, Mujugunda is saying to Krishna that salsangam has happened to me now. Why? The person inside has come in front. That is the difference seeing Krishna and seeing others. That as soon as he saw Krishna, he says, salsangame yarhi tadaiva salgadau. That which will take me to my ultimate destination, total realization, that will happen to me now because paravareshe tui jayate mati. I got, that is 54 in the 51st chapter. 54. Mujugunda Stuti begins from 46th verse, which we have seen before, which is all on the web. And and there is a 54th verse, right up to 58. From 46 to 58 is Mujugunda Stuti, famous in the Bhagavadam. So many things Mujugunda has spoken there, isn't it? So that 54th verse is an important verse in that Stuti, where he is saying this, Bhavapa vargo brahmato yadha bhave janasi, janasya tarhi achyuta salsamagamam. Salsangamo yarhi, very strongly says about this. Satsangam has happened to me now, he says, when he saw Krishna. He didn't say anything else. He said, satsangam has happened to me. Satsangam has happened to me. Tarhi samagamam. So therefore, you can see that that sometimes we misunderstand about satsangam so much. Say a mega guru has come and we all got a chance to touch his feet. We think it has become satsangam. It's not. It's not. So none of them is satsangam till you experience within yourself of the presence of the sat inside. When that happens, it is satsangam. Otherwise, everything is on the perception level. It is. Because general class of people is like that, isn't it? They want somebody dressed up in saffron and danda in the hand and sit there. People are happy. They say, oh, we had satsangam. They feel satisfied inside. Happy to go home with that. To carry the memories and some photographs if you take. They're satisfied with that. But what has happened? In result, what is it? Nothing has happened. The man who has come for satsangam is going back with the same state of consciousness. Nothing has changed. That is not satsangam what Bhagavadam is talking about. Bhagavadam satsangam is this. Very clearly, he explains to us that Mujugunda says, Krishna says to us, that only if you are in contact with the sat inside, then it is satsangam. If that happens, satsangam is a success. That is a success. If that hasn't happened, satsangam is not a success yet. So, everything else even if you touch the guru's feet and says and put it on your head and say, I had salsangam, you had body sangam, not salsangam. What you had is body sangam, sharira sangam it is, not salsangam. Salsangam has not happened. So everything else sensual that way. So in other words, they are dependent on the senses. All other things are dependent on the senses. So real satsangam, what Krishna is talking about, for me, all the time, which never leaves me at any time, and without needing any help of any senses. In other words, without any intermediaries, like the eyes, nose, touch, and all the other senses. And because they are in between, isn't it? In my experience, normally these senses are in between, like an agent, intermediate, it comes in. So, without the interference of the senses, if I am experiencing something, and that is called anubhuti, and that is what Krishna says, that I am that experience, isn't it? You see, that, see these definitions, that without the help of anything, I don't need the help of anything. I don't need the help of any senses. Anything means no senses. I don't need the help of senses or the mind. I don't need any kind of intermediate agent in between. And senses cannot come on the way in between. On your own, you are experiencing something which is anubhuti. Which is anubhuti. That is what I always have. I am that consciousness, awareness of my own existence, which is present inside here and which is always going on in all the three states, Jagrat, Sopnam, Sushupti, and which is also present in the past, present in the future, which won't leave me even after leaving this body. Awareness is still there. Awareness is what goes into another body, is it not? Consciousness is what goes to another body. And body may go, but I'm awareness will never go. It will continue with me. So that vastu, that is what is calling for. That is Krishna is calling in this word, in this chapter, as anubhuti, as Ishvara or Bhagavan or whichever way you want to address that. So thing is very simple. It is very simple. So in principle, Krishna is saying Ishvara is present inside us as the Sat, as the Sat. So therefore, Ishvara, you already got it. It's a vastu you already have. It's not something to have to get it later. This concept is very strong in everyone, isn't it? When you do sadhana also, most of the time you are thinking like this, I've chanted today 25, next many years I'm going to chant 25, and then one day it is going to happen. No, that is not Krishna is talking about. Krishna is saying something what you have already got, not that something what you have to get in the future. Because if it's something to get in the future, then all the 10th chapter and all is a waste of time. Ishvara saro aham atma gudakesha sarobhuda shesthida. What's the point in saying all these things if it is something that you have to get at the end of life or in the next life? Sometimes people say like that, isn't it? I don't know how many lifetimes I have to execute devotional service to realize the self or to know Krishna or to see Krishna. So in other words, when they say that, the thoughts are like this, that it's going to happen sometime later in some lifetime, many lifetimes later it's going to happen. People say like that. So, but that ignorance must go from inside. Krishna is already something what we have got. It's not something you have to get in the future. You already got it. You already got it. So, so if you think that Krishna is, you are going to get Ishvara, is something that you are going to get this sometime in the future. And if you think that self-realization is something that is going to happen in the future. And if you start thinking that one day while sitting underneath the tree like Lord Buddha did, by sitting under the tree and I am going to get it at that time, and all this imagination will come to our thoughts, isn't it? If it happens like that, And if you are thinking like that in your mind and expecting that to happen, you will be waiting for that till you leave this body. You'll be just waiting with these thoughts inside that it is going to happen one day. You can remain on that in that thoughts all the time. It is important to know, because Krishna is pointing out to us straight away in so many chances or places we have seen before, that Krishna is saying to us that Aham Atma Gudakesha. From that verse you can see that I am inside you. It's not something you have to get in the future. You already got it. Then we'll see what is the problem then. That's another thing. But to say that I haven't got it, I'm going to get it later on in some next life or after death or something, to think like that, that itself is simply expectations, imaginations in our mind. That's all it is. So, because what you have to get, you have already got it. What has to happen has already happened. Therefore, in this chapter while commenting, Acharya Swamiji mentions there, Brahmam Bhutavastu Vishayam, he calls it. Bhutavastu Vishayam means, it's a topic that is not to be discussed anymore. It's already got it. What is there to get anymore? That's what he's saying. Brahmam Bhutavastu Vishayam, he says. Bhutavastu means, it's a business already over. The business is already over. Because even so many places in the Bhagavatam also you will see, Upalabdha Matram. You will see, Vipalayana Maharshi is saying this, isn't it? No. You know, few simple words will indicate a lot of things very clearly to us. If you look into Vipalayana Maharshi's words there, in the, I think it is in the fourth chapter, where he mentioned that, third chapter, yeah. Vipalayana Maharshi says there that, you see, remember, 35 to 40 is Vipalayana Maharshi's reply to Nimi, 35 to 40. There you will see word, last verse, there is 6 verses there, 35 to 40, 6 verses, pretty heavy verses they are. Carries the whole weight of Vedanta philosophy in there, those 5 verses, yeah. And the last one, Yarhyabjanava Charanaishana Yoru Bhaktya Chedomalani Vidhamed Gunakarma Jani Tasmin Vishuddham Ubalabhyadam Almadatvam Satchadyadat Amaladrisho Savidra Prakashaha. That's that verse. Something what you have Ubalabdhi. Ubalabdhi means Tasmin Vishuddham Ubalabhyadam. Ubalabhyadam means you have already got it. It's already, Labdha means to have it. Ubalabhyadam Almadatvam, that's awareness, Almadatvam, soul, sense inside. Sakshat Yadha Amaladrisho Savidra Prakashaha. That when he reveals from inside, then you know that you already got it. You already had it. It's not something new. That's what he's saying there. Vipalayana Maharshi is saying exactly the same thing. It's not going to come one day from somewhere. It's already there inside every one of us. Every one of us. So you have to remember that Ubalabdham, that's the word that is used. Ubalabdham atram. Then Ubalabdham is, what has that Ubalabdham? Brahmam. Brahmam is that thing, isn't it? Brahmam is the word addressed to that awareness inside. Awareness inside, Andaryami. What is Ubalabdham? Is Brahmam. And that Brahmam is speaking. And that Brahmam inside every one of you is listening. That is how it is. Satsangam is like that. In Brahmam is speaking and Brahmam is listening from inside. Brahmam is listening from inside. So, because behind your ears, it is Krishna who is sitting behind your ears, gives you the strength to listen. Is it not? Every senses in the body are able to function. Why? Because of the presence of Brahmam or Krishna inside. Similarly, it is Krishna's presence inside who is present behind the words, behind the speech power. It's Krishna who is present, who speaks. Krishna speaks, Krishna listens. In reality, it is like that. But because we are, as I said before, we are mixed up with these two things. And we are so used to this, using the senses in everything,
we can only follow, understand things in that way, through the senses. That's why we say like this, isn't it? I've told him like this. Who is this I? I've told. And who is this? Oh, I heard this. And who is that I who heard? We don't think at the behind it who is hearing and behind it who has spoken. Is it not? So that is why he mentions here, so Krishna who is present in behind you, behind your hearing power, behind your ears, who gives the strength for the ears to hear. So, in other words, he is the one who is really hearing. And he is the one who is really speaking also. If you can think deeper level, you can see that is the truth. So, therefore, because it is like that, while it is spoken here, when we are talking about it right now, at this very moment in time, instead of what you are hearing, if your attention falls on the person who is hearing, then you got it. I know it can happen any time. When the chittavrittis inside is not disturbing you, only then it will happen. If there's a lot of chittavrittis coming inside, and that is not completely under your control, that is the problem. Chittavritti, a lot extent, depends on the modes of nature. For example, something when it's spoken, a man in sattvagunam, a man in rajagunam, and in tamogunam will understand the same thing in three different ways. You know that, don't you? We'll discuss that when you come to the chapter on the three modes of nature. Substance is the same words had created three different impressions or three different conclusions in three different people based on the modes in which they are in. So that is a problem. That will always be there in every one of us. So that is why in Salsangam, the absolute freedom from chittavritti is important. When there is nothing else coming through the mind and thoughts are not disturbing inside, in such a state, whatever that is being spoken, and if your attention falls on the sat at that time, knowing very well that these vibrations or these explanations of the Bhagavad Gita is coming from Brahman, and it is being spoken about Brahman, and the person who is listening is Brahman. So instead of the attention falling on the topic what is being discussed, where your attention is at the moment, what is being discussed, if the attention falls away from there and falls on to the person who is listening, instead of what is being heard, the attention falls on the person who is listening, then that is Salsangam. That is where Salsangam happens. So, more than what you are hearing now, what I am talking about, and more than registering that, or more than understanding that, none of them are important. Neither the hearing what I am saying, nor instead of that, you are sometimes thinking, have I missed that point, you say, sometimes, isn't it? That's not important. If you have missed the point, doesn't matter. Because what are you talking about? That person inside. So that point is not important, is it not? So more than hearing what you have heard now, more than that, giving attention to that, more than registering that inside, or more than even understanding that. Sometimes you may not have understood something. Doesn't matter. That is the point. Or knowing the meaning of all that, what is being spoken. More important than all that is, within you, behind you, behind your hearing capacity, that person who is responsible for you, by whose mercy you are able to hear, and that Antaryami who is present inside, who is hearing that Antaryami, which is called the Sat, or whom I addressed as me, and if your attention has Shraddha, has gone there to Antaryami, then you can say the Salsangam was good. Salsangam was good. Details don't bother. Details are not important. I am speaking continuously from what is based on the Bhagavad Gita. That based on the Upanishads, Bhagavadam, what is being, how it is being put together. But All this is only for one purpose, so that your attention falls on that vastu inside. Otherwise, simply heard everything and reflected on it and gone home. Sometimes people make notes and take it home. We'll look at it later when I get home. No, it won't happen. It won't happen. That is why they very firmly object to that, not to take notes. For this reason only. If it has to happen, it has to happen now. When you are hearing, when it's spoken, right at the time when you are hearing, somehow or the other, if your attention has moved away, rather than hearing, rather than understanding that, rather than analyzing it, if your attention falls inside and start thinking, who is hearing all these things? It's spoken about something, isn't it? And who, from whom this hearing has happened? Who has actually heard it? And that Antaryami inside, this is how slowly we come to Antaryami. Antaryami's attention, how it falls on us. And the best process for that is Shravanam. It's only in Shravanam it will happen, not while reading book. It won't happen. This is a big mistake. Sometimes we read, we think that while read, reflect like that. It does help, but you can say, within say, if you give total 100%, 50 to 60% is hearing. You can say even more sometimes. Some people, they don't study any books. They simply hear. They have that nature of hearing. Very serious hearing. That means hearing and then another 20, 25, 30% is reflection. On hearing, reflection, hearing, reflection. Initially, you have to use your mind, the senses, everything to get to that point. Finally, when you have come to realization better, the mind and senses will drop away from that. This is how realization progresses. When you are progressing in realization, initially you will use your mind and senses because that's all what we know about it. But later on, in due course of time, the mind and senses, you will start slowly leaving behind. In other words, what has happened is, Chitta Shuddhi has happened. When Chitta Shuddhi happens, mind, senses will withdraw. On its own, they will withdraw. And then everything what is spoken will straightaway go to the place where it's meant to go. You see? So out of 100, 50 to 60% is hearing. 20-25% you can say is reflection. And balance 10 or 15% is what you read from the books. Books can only help that much. This is a difficult thing in the process of self-realization. That is why Shravanam is given so much importance, both in the Jnana Margam as well as in the Bhakti Margam. Bhakti Margam also says Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnosmaranam, Padasevanam, like that it goes, isn't it? Here, Shravanam, Mananam, Nididhyasanam, it says. Even reading is not even given any reference there. Mostly it is centered around Shravanam and Mananam. Shravanam and Mananam. Keep hearing, and while hearing, if the Chittavrittis are not too much, if the mind, that means, if there is no Chittavritti, means so more Sattugunam. That's what it means. If Sattugunam is very prominent inside, then there is a possibility that it will hit the person who is listening. Otherwise, it will simply remain as a intellectual exercise. So if your, that is where Anubhavam is, isn't it? Experience is there, not in the senses. So, if your attention falls on that Anubhavam, even for a very short moment, if that happens, that is the greatest satsangam. That is the best satsangam. That is the best satsangam. So, what we have spoken so far is a very brief introduction to this chapter. Because from now on, as I mentioned, that everything is very subtle subject, what is spoken from now on. A lot of things Krishna is going to say in the 13, 14, 15, 16 chapters, all of them, is very much out of our reach through the mind and senses. You know, in the next many chapters, it is like that. It's out of our reach. And that is, and therefore, here itself, we have to put this very firmly, that senses and mind is of no use to me from now on in Bhagavad Gita. Senses and mind is... It will come still, even if I say so, it may still come. But as much as it is in the gunam, according to the modes, they will withdraw from us one day or the other, because this is not a topic from what is being discussed anymore is in relationship with the mind or the senses or pratiti or perception. It has nothing to do with it. It is all meant for anubhavam, anubhuti or experience within oneself, isn't it? So when we start this 13th chapter now, we will be, probably it may take a few months, 2 or 3 months, the rate at which we are doing now, weekend 2 classes, and in that way, generally it takes about 3 months, to finish this. So while in that process, at different times, your attention may fall into that reality, sattva inside. So, and at that moment, if your attention, when it falls on that, if you be situated in that sat at that time, if you do experience that, how will you know that? That is very difficult to explain that through words. It is on its own anubhuti, it is, isn't it? And that anubhuti is something that cannot be spoken of. It cannot be put into words to anyone. So, anubhuti is like this. For a short period of time, it may happen to anybody, and when your Shraddha falls on that, and anubhuti cannot see anubhuti. Anubhuti cannot see anubhuti. It can only give attention. Shraddha can fall on that. That is the way anubhuti is experienced, with Shraddha, not through the eyes. Anubhuti will never report to you that, I had seen anubhuti. No. Anubhuti will be like this in the form of Shraddha. Your Shraddha will fall onto that. So that Shraddha, that I am existing, that awareness inside, and in order to get that, the most important thing is Shraddha. Shraddha is the key for that. And that Shraddha Shakti, the power of that Shraddha, another word of that is Kripa, Krishna's grace, Antaryami's grace inside. And therefore, that Shraddha, if it is there, if with that Shraddha, if you give your Shraddha to that person inside who is creating that Shraddha, one who is creating the Shraddha inside, if your Shraddha falls on that person who is creating the Shraddha inside, then things are through, you are through. But instead, if you brought your mind inside and with the mind you start churning it, if you are trying that, you won't get it. You won't get it. Because if you try with your mind, it will not happen because you won't understand it. Mind means understanding, isn't it? With the mind, what you do normally? You understand. We understand and put it in the hard drive here. And then say, I got it, you say. What did you get it? You not got it. You got it in your head. But that's no good. It is experience. That is what I'm saying. That anubhuti has to happen. Because this is a topic which cannot be understood. What Krishna is going to say from this chapter onwards is a topic that cannot be understood. It's not for the mind. This whole topic is not for the mind. So if you are able to do this, to keep the mind away and able to hear that, it will come in your experience, but mind won't allow. That's the problem. That its mind is the whole blockage. It will interfere and it will pollute it. And it will make you feel, as soon as you come out of the room, I heard certain things. I don't think everything is right what they said. The mind will tell you from inside. And it will completely derail the whole process. He will take you to completely on a wrong level. He will carry you. And by the time you get home, I wasted a few hours unnecessarily listening to all these things. So many wrong conclusions will come from inside. This is the difficulty in the Churasya Dhara Nishidam Duratyaya, says Kathopanishad. Isn't it? This is that Nishidam Duratyaya. Churasya Dhara Nishidam Duratyaya. He says it's just like walking on a razor edge. Why is it spoken like that? Because you don't know when this thing called mind will come and kick you out from your little realization, whatever you may get. He won't allow you to have it. He will come and control you to such an extent, then you will say, you'll go with the mind after that. Even if you get something, I'm saying, like that. So, so while it is spoken, at the same moment experience has to happen.
right now here itself. So if you think that I have now understood everything in my mind, I'll go home and think about it, and then I'll experience it at home. If you think like that, it won't be there. It is not for that. It cannot happen that way. Because by then what it means is you have fallen into the trap of the mind. You have fallen to the top of mind. That is why sometimes you say, I will take a note of everything. Because once we get also older, memory power also is not so good. And also it's difficult to remember everything, because mind also its limitations. Memory has its limitations. But for Shastram, to go in that road, it is not meant to be like that. All other subjects like physics, chemistry and all that, that's fine. You have a good memory power, then you can remember a lot of things and you present yourself very well in the examinations, you get your high grades and all that. That's another topic altogether. So, but this will not happen like that, that's the important thing. So, these are certain tricks in relationship to this chapter. Therefore, this is not a class. Sometimes people say class. It's not a class. In class, what you do? I have memorized, I have tell you everything, and you memorize all of them, then the class is successful, isn't it? Class is successful then. That's what the teacher and the lecturers do in the colleges and schools and all that. They'll come and give you a class on a particular hour and for an hour or so, and you take notes or you record it up, or nowadays it's so advanced, everything is on the net. You go and some people don't go to the classrooms anymore. They'll sit at home and download it from the... They say, why go all the way there to the university? So a lot of university students are doing that now. Those who... In the current days, it is like that. And sometimes it shocked me. Some of these college students, they are not going to college. They are wandering around in Hyde Park and Oxford Street and everything. And you tell them, you say, so I'll... And then in the night, after everyone has slept, up to that time they were living the life in this world. In the midnight, they are downloading everything, all the classes for the day. It's in all fields of, particularly in the big universities, that's what is going on. Midnight, they become very alive, like the Rakshasas. They become very alive, downloading everything, all the classes of that day. And they may not even see the lecturer for months together. And they are not bothered also who the lecturer is, because it's all on the web anyway. So web has become the web guru more than the teachers. It has come in, like, that's how it is developing now. You can see that in the university who are studying now these days. A lot of them is shocking. It is not like that before, but it's completely different now. Anyway, neither of them is of any use to us. In our spiritual life, all of them are useless. So here, this is not a process that happens gradually, little by little by little. It's not. Every moment it is perfect, Purnam. Soul is always Purnam. When you get it, you got it. At that moment you have got it. When you have lost it, you have not lost it. But when you got it, it is perfect. It is not something that you reach that state gradually. When, while hearing, if somehow or the other Shraddha falls on the person who is listening or hearing it from Andaryami, that means from Andaryami, if your attention falls on Andaryami, you can say that it is perfect. It is perfect at that time. It's not that something happens gradually. That is why perfection is already there in us. It's a very interesting science how misled we are in this world. Misled we are in this world. Everybody is working for perfection in this world, isn't it? Everybody is working for perfection in this world. Like sometimes... we are upgrading in computer. That is what's going on, isn't it? Or trying to think that it's getting perfect. In spiritual life, it is opposite. Totally opposite, that is. Originally, there was always perfection. What has happened to us is, we have degraded all the time. We are not reaching perfection. You can see in life, you take a small little child. He is perfect. His body is full of energy, full of youth. And as he grows, he is full of intellectually, mentally, everything is grasped better. What happens later on? Little by little you lose everything and finally you're gone. So from perfection comes imperfection. From imperfection, perfection cannot come. Na sade vidyade bhavo, na bhavo vidyade sada. The same message is coming back again through this. So as far as soul is concerned, spiritual life is concerned, perfection is already there inside us. What is happening is we have become imperfect. That imperfections has to go, and the perfection inside will manifest automatically. So not that I'm imperfect now, I'll gradually become perfect. That is how normally we think like that. That is not true. So while listening itself, suddenly perfection has to happen. And if perfection happens, then you can take it that you got it. You got it. So all at that point in time, when you have got that anubhavam or anubhuti, then you are complete. There's nothing more to get after that. What is the symptom of perfection? Perfection is this, that once you have got it, you're not hankering after something more to get it. There ends the story. Everything is finished at that point. So there is, as far as Krishna is concerned, there is no vastu inside. The vastu inside, the nature of that vastu is, it is always purnam. Purna vastu that is. It is never apurnam. Body is apurnam. Mind is apurnam. Intelligence is apurnam. Senses are apurnam. Ego is apurnam. All imperfect. Vastu inside is purnam. Vastu inside is purnam. And therefore, if your attention has fallen on the vastu, you are purnam. At that moment, you are purnam also. Therefore, here there is no vastu which is apurnam, imperfect. And imperfect vastu cannot exist. That Krishna has spoken in that verse, isn't it? Imperfect vastu cannot exist. That is what nasade vidyade bhavo means. Sat is perfect vastu, and that always exists. It is never imperfect. And if you say that, if there is a vastu inside which is imperfect, that is a lie. That is a lie. And that is why Ishopanishad begins, isn't it? Purnam adam, purnam idam, purnat purnam udachade, purnasya, purnam adaya, purnam eva avashishade. Purnatam, that purnatvam nature, perfection is in the soul, not in the body. So when you listening to this Bhagavad Gita, you have to always look into these verses in the Ishopanishad also. And in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna will also talk about the same thing in many places. You have to connect them up each other, and you can see where Krishna is taking us to. Trying to emphasize that point, what nasado vidyade bhavo, the nature of the soul, nature of the consciousness. Isn't it? What really exists is only purnam. Perfection is the only thing that exists here. And both the speaker and the listener, we are all perfect within ourselves. But somehow or the other, that from purnata, from apurnata, from imperfection, you cannot go to perfection. See, this is the same problem. What the science is saying to us is also the same thing, isn't it? Science is saying to us that we have progressed from the ape and from the man who was working with the tools, stones and cutting. They make pictures also, you know, in the history books. They are giving us pictures. If you look at the modern history books, they'll show you the photographs of people who are living in the caves. And they're saying to us that how our ancestors were. They were all looking very funny looking, weren't they? And their conclusion is that from that body, we have come like this. These people have not seen who have made the pictures. Eh? They have not seen the caveman. They have dug some fossil somewhere, and based on that, they have interpreted, using their mind, they have interpreted it. And they have created a photo, imagination, in their imagination, some picture. And we have created and presented an absolute truth to our children in the books. You go and study this, and then GCSE, all things out after that. So that is where things have gone wrong. So according to them, from everything was imperfect in the beginning, and now this 21st century man, totally perfect, completely crazy in the head, running around in this world like mad dogs everywhere. This is the perfection of the life, as they are saying to us now. Isn't it? And there is no other time in the history when people had so many diseases like today, both inside, outside. So such is the case today. So all this is indicating to us the madness of the whole education.
imperfection cannot make it perfect. Perfection is already there. What has happened is we became imperfect. We have fallen, we have degraded, and we have come to this present state and where we are today. And yesterday I was reading one statement from Prabhupada saying that it is very difficult, he said, to get this point to the heads when they are so absorbed in the machinery, he said. In the machinery culture, he said, too much into industry and culture, it develops a habit inside, cannot see the finer things of the brain of the rishis, how they were able to come to certain conclusions. It takes a long time, he said, to wash that brain and get this point across. So, here, anubhuti we were talking about. So one who speaks, one who listens is always purnam. From apurnada, imperfection, you cannot become perfect. From perfection, you become imperfect. That is the process. From perfection, you come to imperfection. You can see how the Vedic way of thinking is Satyayugam first, Kaliyugam last. Satyayugam perfection, the least perfect, apurnada, imperfection, Kaliyugam. That itself is the proof. Satyayugam, everyone in knowledge, everyone in proper senses, realization, total peace inside, able to absorb things, able to focus on things much better than today. And that is why everyone who lived in the Satyayugam is addressed as Brahmana, because these are Brahminical qualities. And then what happened? Originally there is only one Varnam, Brahmana only. From Brahmana, when the Rajogunam came inside, due to the change in the modes of nature, Kshatriyas were born from Brahmanas. That is how it is. Now, see, when you read Bhagavad Gita, sometimes people think that Krishna has created four Varnam, isn't it? So they are thinking that one day, Krishna, after creating, he said, you Brahmana, you Kshatriya, you Vaishya, you Shudra. Like that. So we are also trying to do the same thing now. That is not how it works. There has to be Brahmanas only first. From Brahmana, when Rajoguna enters into him, they start fighting. That means Kshatriya quality has come. Fighting is Kshatriya nature, isn't it? They have to fight, otherwise they are not Kshatriya. So then, part of Brahmanas have fallen down and became Kshatriya. And when these Kshatriyas and Brahmanas existed in the beginning, out of them, some of them thought, this is neither of them is good, let me make some money. When that thought came to them, among the Kshatriyas, many of them, they became Vaishyas. This is the process of the four orders have come into existence. Not that you had hundreds of people, thousands of people Krishna created and said, started breaking them up or given them a title, you are Brahmana, you are Kshatriya, you are Vaishya, like that. No, it didn't happen like that. What I'm saying is, from perfection is Brahmanam. Brahmanyam is perfection. From that fallen condition is Kshatriya. Further fallen is Vaishya, and more than that is the Shudra state. So this is that gradual deterioration happened from Satyayugam to Kaliyugam. In Tridayugam, Kshatram became prominent. In Dwaparayugam, more Vaishyas came in, but Kaliyugam, Kalautu Shudra Sambhava. Everything came into that state. So you can see that from perfection, these are totally opposite to what we are used to thinking, isn't it? We are used to thinking in a different way. Perfection comes from imperfection, we think. But no, perfection comes. No, from perfection comes imperfection. We degrade all the time. And then after Kaliyugam, again by Krishna's arrangement, perfectional stage will happen. That he has to kickstart again the whole sign, Suryavamsham and Chandravamsham. And from personalities, the same Brahminical culture has to resuscitate. And from there, further degradation. This is the cycle all the time continuing. So what has happened is, that perfection inside, we have lost it, forgotten it. That perfection inside, we have forgotten it. What is the reason for that? That is what Krishna is going to say.
that some thoughts have occurred in our mind that we are not perfect. We are not perfect. So, and because we give, this is very firmly rooted inside us, isn't it? We are not perfect. That is why we continue to explore and inquire how to become perfect, isn't it? So it says here that if you give importance to those thoughts which makes you feel that you are not perfect, what's happening is you are not giving attention to that perfection inside. That's what it means. You're not giving attention to the perfection inside. So, but perfection, you have already got it. But that vastu inside, within ourselves, each one of us, right now, it is present inside, and that is addressed as Satya Chitta Anandam. Soul inside, Krishna present inside is Sachidanandam, isn't it? Sachidanandam. And so many words Vedam has used to express that. Sachidanandam, Prajnanam, all these are words used in the Shastram. So that Satya inside, which is also called as Prajnanam, which is also addressed as Atma, which is also called as the awareness, isn't it? Avabodham or Chaitanyam. All these are the same vastu inside. See, same vastu, which is perfect. In different names, it is addressed in the Shastram. Sometimes we call it as Satya, sometimes as Prajnanam Brahmam. Prajnanam Brahma, one of the same. Prajnanam it is called. Sometimes it's called Atma, simple terms. Sometimes it's called as awareness or consciousness or avabodham in different ways. And sometimes we call it as the Chaitanya, the living force, spiritual spark. So many words he uses in English also, spiritual spark we say. So, in principle, the substance is one. And that vastu, whatever by name you call it, whether you call it as Shiva or Vishnu or Ganesh or any other name, Ramachandra or Krishna, that vastu is one and the same. You are addressing it by different names. You are calling it by different names. So, and all the other forms, when you are addressing that vastu inside, in different ways people will approach that vastu inside. Vastu is one. Aham Atma Gudagesha Sarvabhudashe Asthida. That is the vastu. So, and that vastu, we already have it. We already have it. But instead of giving attention to that, what has happened is, we have started giving attention to what is pratiti. When you started giving attention to the pratiti or shraddha falls on the pratiti, any moment if your shraddha falls on the pratiti, what happens to you is not satsangam but asatsangam. If your shraddha falls on that vastu inside, what we call by different names, if your attention falls there, it is satsangam. If the attention falls on anything else outside, it is Asat Sangam. So, and everything, Asat Sangam can happen only through pratiti, perception. That is how Asat Sangam happens. So, in order that, to get out of this Asat Sangam, we require Sat Sangam. We require Sat Sangam. So, in Sat Sangam, whenever we are talking about this Sat inside, at that point, it is called Bodhanam. Bodhanam means you are talking about the Sat and it is going inside, and some point in time, the attention may fall on that, on the person about whom it is spoken. Shraddha falls on that. At that time, what you experience inside, that is called Pratyabhijna. Pratyabhijna is a word. In the Bhagavadam, you will see that word in several places mentioned, this Pratyabhijna. Pratyak Prashantam Vasudeva Shabdam. Who calls that? So many places. It is there in the Jadabharata state. So Jadabharata may explain that to Rahugana. If you look into, in the, I don't know how many places this word Pratyabhijna comes. So many places it comes. Pratyak Prashantam, it is in the fifth canto. If you look into that, that is how he put it to him. Our Jadabharata given that into like that to Rahugana. He says to Rahugana, if your attention falls on that, he says, yeah, if you look at the 12th chapter in the 5th canto, 11th verse, very nicely said, he says, Jnanam Vishuddham Paramartham Ekam Anandaram Tubhir Brahmam Satyam Pratyak Prashandam Bhagaval Shabdham Satyam Yad Vasudevam Kavayo Vadandi. That is called Pratyavidya. That is called Pratyavidya. That Pratyak Prashandam, which is Pratyavidya. Pratyak Prashandam Bhagaval Shabdham Satyam. Bhagaval Shabdham, we address him as Bhagavan. Bhagaval Shabda Samyam, that's the sound you are using to express that Pratyaprashanda, that Pratyabhijna. To express Pratyabhijna, you use the word Bhagavan. Pratyaprashandam Bhagaval Shabdham Samyam, as call it as Bhagavan, yad Vasudevam Kavayo Vadandi, and others address it as Vasudeva also, but the Kavayo Vadandi. And some other kavis, learned people, they also address it as Vasudeva. And what is the nature of that? Jnanam Vishuddham Paramarthamekam Anandaram Tubahir Brahma Satyam Pratyak Prashandam Bhagaval Shabda Samyam Yad Vasudevam Kavayo Vadandi. So you can see this Pratyak Pratyapinya. So these things, what we call it as the Sat, Pratyanam, Atma, Awareness, Avabhodam, Chaitanyam, all these things referring to only one thing, whichever way you call it, doesn't matter, and whatever name you give it to that, Bhagaval Shabda Samyam, Bhagavan, whether you address him as Shiva or Vishnu or Krishna or whatever way you want to call that, but that Vastu which is present inside, and if you give attention to that, instead of giving attention to what comes through Pratiti, then if you do like that, at that moment, if your attention has fallen, instead of what is falling on the Pratiti, if it falls on that Vastu inside, that is called, when your attention falls on that, what you have got at that time is called Pratyabhijna. See? When the Shraddha has fallen on that thing, Satya, Pratyanam, Atma, Awareness, Bodham, Chaitanyam, all these things, addressing the same thing, which is the Sat inside. If your attention during Satsangam, if it has fallen on that, what you experience there at that time, that's called Pratyabhijna. That is called Pratyabhijna. Pratyabhijna is the word they use for that. So all these words, it may sound like French or German, all these different words what we are roofing there. So, but Ajahn Swami mentions this very clearly, that Pratyabhijna means, Pratyabhijna means, difference between Pratyabhijna and the other thing is, it is not something you develop gradually. The moment your Shraddha falls on that, you got it. That's the difference. That is the difference. The moment your Shraddha falls on it, you got it. And that is the difference between Pratyabhijna and the other things. Other things, sometimes you study some topic, it takes time to develop the knowledge of the subject, and it goes on and on and on, and you become master's degree and then your doctorate in that, and then like that you become an expert in that, isn't it? In this, it doesn't work like that. In this, somehow or the other, if your attention has fallen on that Vastu inside, you got Pratyabhijna straight away. That is called, that is the difference. For example, he gives the example like this. Suppose somebody is wearing a chain in the neck, and he feels he has lost the chain, he has forgotten about it, and he is searching everywhere. Suddenly somebody came and told him, look, the one you are looking thing is already in your neck. And then suddenly he becomes aware of that, isn't it? Similarly, it took only a split second for him to know that it was already there on his neck. He didn't have to search for it. So similarly, soul is like that. It's not that you will do a lot of things and eventually you will get it one day. It's already there. It's not something you have to go to get it later on. If you think it is going to happen sometime in the future, you'll be waiting for a long time to come. It's not going to happen that way. You can see, it's a simple logic it is. If you apply this to Bhagavad Gita, you can see that Krishna is saying to us, Bandho mukta idivyakya gunado mena vastuda gunasya maya mulatval namai mokshona bandhanam. Moksham bandham, bondage, liberation and all that, in reality it doesn't exist. knowledge and that removing the ignorance, and that's it, that's finished, business is over there. So similarly you can see that when the chain or the whatever that was on the neck, necklace or whatever you're tying, you lost it and you're searching and you found it, suddenly pointed out and showed it to you. Similarly, if you start thinking that you don't have to, this topic also, you don't have to write it down, you don't have to go home, you don't have to think about it. There's not much of a homework to do in that way. Like in the school and college where you have to do a lot of homework. They give you a lot of homework these days. Mm-hmm. Isn't it? Keep you occupied, some or the other, to make you a specialist in the subject. So here, what is Krishna saying here, that as soon as you become, your Shraddha has fallen on it and you become aware of it, that is called Pratyavijna. That is called Prasambhijna. So that is why Krishna is saying that Atma is already Siddha. You already got it. Who else says this? If you remember? Who else? Very important personality has spoken this. And I have repeated many times in the class also. Yes, exactly. Prahlada said this. Isn't it?
Yeah.
How did he put it? Look into the seventh canto. You will see there. Siddhatva lihasaruvada. He says. Siddhatva. Already got it. It's not something has to come from outside. In seventh canto, if you look, that you will see there that Prahlada was, he talked about the nature of the body and nature of the soul. Remember that? Nature of the body and 12 things about, 6 things about the body and 12 things about the soul, he said. Prior to that, he says this. What chapter is that? 56?
76.
No, not the Parabrahma, not that one. No, this is Narada Maharshi instructing and Prahlada is talking about it. Forgetting all this next time. He mentioned that Buddhi and also Atma, Avyayam, he says, six, isn't it? 7, 6. Which one? What verse
that,
number?
That's 27, 7, 20.
Seventh canto, seventh chapter.
Yeah, verse
20. Verse 20. Yeah, that's right. So prior to that, he mentions there, isn't it? Siddhatvaliha sarvada, he says. Siddhatval, we have already got it. That is talking about the the verse 18 is talking about the body. The 6 changes that's happening in the body. Verse 19 is talking about the soul. About talking about the soul. But prior to that, while instructing the while talking to the boys, to his friends, I think he mentioned that.
Yeah.
Siddhatva liha sarvada, he says. You already got it. What are you looking for then?
Yeah.
Yeah. If you look into sketch chapter 6 and then 26, yes. No, not 26. Verse 20, no, 19. Verse 19. Yeah, 6:19. 7:6:19. Prahlada said the same thing. Nahi achyuta prinayato bahuayaso asuralmaja almatval sarvabhudanam siddhatval iha sarvada. That is that verse. These are important verses in the Bhagavadam. When you study Bhagavadam, you must take note of these important verses. Because when you are studying about the soul, what Prahlada had to say about the soul, that's important, isn't it? Because he is talking to us from the platform of realization. So he's saying, it is not very difficult to place Krishna, he says. Nahi achyutam pranayato bahuva ayaso asuralmaja, O son of the demons. About his friends, he's saying. Obviously, they were calling each other as demons, I suppose. It looks like that, isn't it? Bahuva ayaso asuralmaja, he says. My dear friends, the demons, he says. So he says, bahuva ayaso asuralmaja. It's not very difficult, he says, to please Krishna. Why? Why? The reason is, Almatval sarvabhudanam, present inside us, Alma. And what else? Siddhatval iha sarvada. He's already got it. Siddhatval iha sarvada. Siddhatvadiha sarvada. So that is what that is. So it's already something Prahlada is saying there. We have already got it. It's not something. So there itself, if you take Prahlada's words seriously, then the search has to stop outside. Outside search has to come to stop, isn't it? So that is why he says here that that Atma is Siddhatvadiha Sarvada. Why did he say Sarvada? Sarvada means it's always there. Is it not? Atma is always there. What? In the form of consciousness. Consciousness is always there. You can analyze it through your intelligence and through your experience also. Both ways, if you study consciousness, you know it is always there. It is always there. So that Atma, Krishna, Prahlada is saying also, Atmatvat sarvabhudanam siddhatvat iha sarvada. Isn't it? Atmatvat sarvabhudanam. As Atma, consciousness, he is present inside and he is the drk. Drka means one who is seeing things. He is the seer. He is the seer. And that drka, seer, is coming to us in the form of this awareness. I am, I am, I am. This awareness, it comes to us. And that is what is available to us. Siddhatva liha sarvada. All the time, for all the people, in all places. For all time, all places, for all the people. Siddhatva liha sarvada, he says here. So when it is spoken like that, when we talk about that particular verse now, for example, Prahlada's verse, when Prahlada is saying that Atmatval sarvabhudanam siddhatval iha sarvada, if you sit and think about that, and suddenly by your good fortune or by your freedom from the mind, or your chitavrittis are not disturbing you, or sattugunam has taken control, it is possible at that time your shraddha or attention can fall on that vastu. Atmatvat sarvabhudanam siddhatvariha sarvada. That's why some verses in the Bhagavadam, when it is spoken, you have to take serious note of it. This is how people study Bhagavadam. They just don't memorize all the verses. That of course comes through daily reading. You start memorizing more verses. But people who have deeply absorbed in the Bhagavadam, if you converse with them, you'll notice one thing, how inside that knowledge of the Bhagavadam is working in their experience all the time. They don't use the mind and brain to think about it. From their experience, they will tell you that it is there in the Bhagavadam like this. Prahlada has spoken like this. It's not from the memory it is coming. Because Prahlada has spoken about it, it is the truth. It can't be a false thing. It's the greatest personality in the Bhagavadam, like Uddhava, isn't it? So, and Prahlada has said this, And nobody else has spoken, because not many people can speak like that. Prahlada has spoken, isn't it? So when Prahlada said that, naturally your attention falls on that vastu. Atmatval sarvabhudanam siddhatva liha sarvada. So automatically that verse will come to you when you need it, at the point when you need to think about that soul. So when it falls like that, you can see that suddenly your attention goes on to it, to that line, particular line or the verse. At that time, the chit shakti inside, from Andaryami, there is a flow of that Shraddha from the chit shakti towards that. And that activity, when that happens, it's called Pratyabhijna. It is called Pratyabhijna. That means any time, we are talking so many things. We are talking about stories, we are discussing about the forest, we are discussing about the war, so many things in the Bhagavadam, is it not? In Bhagavadam and in the Puranas also, a lot of things are discussed. But even while discussion is going on, suddenly you will find some statements like this. Prahlada's statement, Pipalaya Maharshi's statement, Hari Maharshi's statement, Krishna's statement, Uddhava's statement. Different people will, now and then they will throw away one realization like this. If you hold on to that, and if your attention falls onto the vastu inside, the sat inside, then it is called Pratyabhijna. Then it is called Pratyabhijna. Pratyabhijna, that is the word for that. So, again I will repeat that, because these things has to be clear up inside, in our mind. We have a lot of misconceptions. We are so used with the mind and intelligence and everything, that we, as soon as you stop listening to the classes, and you get, you go back to your mental platform. And you start analyzing with the mind everything. And then question starts coming, doubt starts coming. All that time, you're completely ignorant that the whole process itself is wrong when you're asking that question. You see, you completely moved away from the process itself. You're gone to another process of the mind and the senses. And that's when all the questions are coming. And some people, they have completely taken that as the shelter of the process of the mind and the senses. And that is why their confusion never finishes. Because they are not going to the vastu, rather they are busy beating around the bush, as you say. In the same way, they are busy with those things, with the mind and the senses. Trying to understand Bhagavatam with mind and senses, you won't get anywhere with the mind and the senses, or Bhagavad Gita for that matter. With the mind and senses, if you try to understand Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam, you won't get anywhere. You won't get anywhere. That's what is going to happen. So imagine how many years we are going to waste in our life to study Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam. Many, many years you'll be wasting in that process of trying to understand Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita. And you will realize one day that the whole thing is so confusing. That will be the conclusion finally. You will find a lot of contradictions, because mind will help you to create their contradictions inside. And the senses also will dictate to you from go in a different directions of inquiry, and then your confusion will prevail. It will never go. So if you want to come out of that confusion about the mind, you can see this all the time in the devotee's case also. It's not nobody's example. You can't say devotee, non-devotee in this matter, because this totally depends on the modes of nature of the person who is listening. It's not based on initiation. It's not based on how many rounds you chant. It's totally based on the state in which your consciousness is, your inquiry is. Like I mentioned this also before, that one devotee was giving a class, and he was talking about the war between Krishna and Salva. War was going on. It is a big thing, isn't it, in the Bhagavatam. People get very attracted by that, especially those who are very scientifically minded people. They get attracted by Krishna and the war between Krishna and Salva. Salva managed to get an aeroplane from Shiva, which was very amazing aeroplane. It cannot be detected by radar. And that war is discussed in the Bhagavatam. And in the war it says there were millions of flames they were fighting at that time. So one devotee was giving a class and he was saying, he says, after reading all this, a doubt came to his mind. What will be the air traffic control system they were? How the air traffic control system was working in that battle. This is how his mind is gone. You see? So you can see how the mind kicks in and starts creating problems for you in your spiritual life. So there's nothing you can do about it. Till you come out of this platform of the body and platform of the mind and take the message what is important, what Krishna has spoken. And he said, I've been thinking about the whole night. How could that be? Our traffic control system will be working. And so millions of planes at the same time fighting. Because Bhagavatam says there is millions of planes are fighting. So his mind went straight to the air traffic control side of it. He thought that's very important because so many planes are flying at the same time. And he was asking the question to others in the class, whether have you got any answer for that? So what do you do? This, it always comes. People, it's not you blame him for that. It's just the way our mind causes problems to us all the time. So, here. Yeah. So that is what that pratyabhijna, what Krishna calls it as that. Again, I'll repeat that. Cannot understand this, don't say that, and don't get up. Think that let me give a little more attention. Because it's not for the mind to get it. It's not to be got by the mind. Sometimes when you say, oh, it's very important, you have to be very focused, people immediately get up. Say, let me listen carefully now what he's going to say. No, it's not that. That's not what is expected. So, when you are completely relaxed in your place where you are sitting now, and sometimes very easily the attention will go to that vastu inside. Very easily, will go to this inside. So, when satsangam, it may happen few times, many times. Depends on our modes of nature, which has a very important role. Very important role. Because you can see how important that is when Krishna talks about the modes of nature. How powerful they are. And how sattugunam, rajogunam, tamogunam interpret the same message in three different ways. It interprets that. Mind, because mind is in the gunam, isn't it? Three gunam, three modes of nature is in the mind. Satta, rajasa, tamasa is in the mind. And the mind, as soon as the message comes, it interprets the message. According to Rajogunam. Now that devotee who spoke, naturally there was Rajogunam in him. That's why straight away it went to air traffic control. At least he thought about it. The man in Tamogunam, he won't even think about it. He will just read it and bypass it. But the man in Sattogunam knows where to find the message. He will know where to get the message from, rather than worrying about the war or the aeroplane. So same three persons in three modes will get the same words and have three different questions. That is the power of the modes of nature. And that is not totally in our control. Of course, to some extent we have, Krishna says how important it is to stay in Sattogunam. Because Krishna also mentioned Sattval Sanjayade Jnanam. Knowledge will only affect, influence a person if he is in Sattogunam. Sattval Sanjayade Jnanam. Jnanam will have its effect only in Sattogunam. That is the most important thing. So, Satsangam means this. So, while all these things are spoken, some people will experience, some people may not experience. Some people will experience, some people may not experience. So, so somebody says that, oh, I am not experiencing, but somebody else says, I have got some experience of that. What it means is that the person who says he has not experienced means that for him, shravanam, the hearing was not proper. That's all the problem is. That what is the problem for the shravanam, for the hearing? Our own thought waves. Chitavritti inside. Chitavritti inside. So if you talk about in Krishna's words, that thought waves, if you talk about in Krishna's words, Krishna calls that as envy. Krishna calls it as envy. If you remember this, in the 9th chapter, Rajavidya Rajguhyayogam, this envy is not towards a person. You have to remember that. It's not towards another person. It is called envy. Because Krishna mentioned before, in that verse, Rajavidya, Rajaguhyam, Pavitram, Idamuttamam, Pratyakshavagaman, Dharmam, Susuham, Kartum, Avyayam. Remember in the 9th chapter? We discussed that at that time. That the in the 9th chapter, Pravakshya idam tume guhyadamam pravakshyami anasuyave. Remember that word? Anasuyave? We talked about it a lot. What this anasuyave means. Freedom from envy. Remember that? Anasuyave. Freedom from envy. So that asuya, that envy is the problem. Asuya means envy. Asuya means envy. So that envy is there inside and that is the problem. That is why it is not happening. So that is in Krishna's words. Krishna calls it as envy. So that is why Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, you should talk about this only to a person who is free from envy. Who is free from envy. One big Mahatma said this. He said he was speaking to a group of people and there were some children also. So after the class when he spoke, the child had got it. The adults didn't get it. Why? Because in the child's mind, there is no prejudice towards anything. It's open. Whereas in our mind, there is so much different concepts and convictions inside, we find it difficult to get it. So, therefore, that is why Krishna is saying that from anasuyave, he says, isn't it? Anasuyave, he said. Such a person, for him, if you say that, where is the envy? Envy is not towards person. Envy is not towards person. Because sometimes we have envy towards knowledge. Envy towards knowledge. That means, suppose something is spoken and you are not really experiencing it and you won't accept it then. I didn't get it, you will say. I didn't get it. So, I won't accept it, you will say. Sometimes we say to others, listen, you convince me. Then I will accept it. But due to his prejudice inside, or asuya, or envy inside, towards that knowledge, it is not entering inside. This spiritual knowledge has got that problem. Because our conviction in the body is so strong, when you are told that you are not the body, you are the soul, the body side of it is telling, no, I am not accepting that, I am the body. This is the battle inside going on between mind and the soul. From the soul side is saying to us, you are not the body. Mind is telling me I am the body. And this is the envy of the mind. Envy of the mind. That knowledge it's not accepting what the soul is releasing to us. Soul is telling us body is not important. You have nothing to do with the body. Body is not real. And you are seeing that body is not real. And you also know that it's going to go one day. Still you won't leave it. Why? That envy inside. That's what Krishna is using it as envy. Basically what it means is that our reluctance to accept something when it is spoken to us straightforward, still finding it difficult to accept it due to that problem. So I will not accept it. That is that. So when you give importance to your intelligence, when you give importance to your decisions, that is called envy. That is what it is called. That means you are giving importance to your intelligence and your mind and your decisions, isn't it? And that is what is called envy. So, otherwise, the truth, only if it comes from a certain person, I will accept it. That way. That is also a kind of envy. Only if it comes from a certain authority, only then I will accept it. Otherwise, I won't accept it. Because if you have this prejudice, if you have that bias, you can't get to know the truth. Sometimes you can see this problem with people, many times. You say something, they will say, where is in the books? They will ask. That person will never make it. Someone who asked this question, that you have said something based on the shastram or realization, and that person says to you that, I have not seen this Prabhupada's books. One blank blank statement and said therefore it's not truth. Such a person, what chance has he got? That is not very spiritual understanding of life. Spiritual life is not like that. Prabhupada did say that everything is there in the books, take advantage of it. That's all what he meant. He never said that you can't get it anywhere else. If you have said that, that will be a big statement. That they will never say like that for the first instance. Because Prabhupada also has got it from somebody else. So it hasn't come like that, isn't it? So it's not something that Antaryami inside, how it will manifest in anyone at any time. It's very difficult to say. Very difficult to say. So as long as these prejudices like this is inside, at that time, that then when it is there, if the prejudice is not there and this intelligence is also free from this problem, then what will happen is our reception power, receptive power, is in a peaceful state and steady, then and in our intelligence, our buddhi is present in the heart. In other words, heart has an important influence in the intelligence. These are two centers in the body, isn't it? One, the mind and intelligence doing one business. In the heart, in the anubhuti level, something else. But if heart takes control of that intelligence, where we are utilizing that, so in that situation, this word buddhi, in Vedam, it has a completely, does not mean brain. Does not mean brain. Actually, it means heart. It means heart, hrudayam. Because that's where anubhuti is. Anubhuti is not here. Brain is perception. And interpretation of the perception is in the brain. Anubhuti is experience which is in the heart. So whenever in Vedantam and all, when we say about brain, it does not mean this brain, rather it means the heart, where the center, where everything is experienced. So it is not in the head, I'm saying, because it is here, the body and the head. So the body and the mind, everything. It is in this place. It's not here. Body and the mind. So, heart. So, if you are hearing with the heart, as soon as you hear, you will get it. If you are hearing with the heart. If you hear with the brain and the mind, you won't get it. You won't get it. That is the message. Because there is nothing but much to understand here. Nothing much to understand. See, information gathering, that's what normally we do, isn't it? That is not much of a use. Collecting information from everywhere. So many things we have come to collected information in this world, isn't it? Some people, they are so good, they collect information of everything in this world, to the very minute details. And when you start talking to them, we get an impression that it's like talking to an encyclopedia or something. So much information they collect from different places, from supermarkets and from shops and internet and all sorts of places. And when you start speaking to them, you think that they are very knowledgeable. Yes, there are a lot of information they have collected. That's no doubt. Yeah, that's unquestionable. But has it solved the problem? That is the question. What has happened to us? 10, 15 years in the university and college spent. Lot of information we collected. Most of it is forgotten now. At this point in time, it has never been used at all. You could say that practically you spent 10 or 12 years in the schools and in the A-levels or whatever. Another 5, 6 years in the university. So it means about 15, 18 years in the university. How much has come useful? Total waste of time it was. Practically, what you have used probably is 1% or 10% probably maximum, not more than that. As soon as you go into a particular profession, what requires for the profession you study, and a lot of other things what you have spent your time studying, all that has gone wasted. All that is gone wasted. So here, what point is here, this is not for that way to learn. This is not a subject to be learned in that way. It is not for studying and not for knowing it either. So that is why, you know this word Pandit, in Shastram they call it Pandit, isn't it? This Pandit word, when it came to English, what happened? You know what happened? If you know about any topic, they'll say he's a Pandit. They start calling it.
Actually, that is a misused word. Pandita is only one who knows the soul, who has experienced the soul. He is the one who is called a Pandit. But normally it is because of the difference in the way people who have started using it, and it becomes an acceptable practice. Nowadays people will say, oh, he's a Pandit in that particular topic, isn't it? Like Jawaharlal Nehru was called Pandit Jawaharlal, who had no clue of the soul. And there he was a hardcore materialist in many ways. And they were calling, because he was born in a Pandit family, in Kashmiri Pandit family he was born, so he was called Pandit Jawaharlal Nehru. He was addressed like that, Pandit. So this Pandit word has come to English also. If you look into the dictionaries, you will see this word Pandit. It is the same thing, this word priest also. I don't know, this word priest is a totally misunderstood word among the Indian community as well as in the Western community also. Priest is considered to be fourth class person from the Shastram point of view. That means he was good for nothing, absolutely useless. That is the person who becomes a priest. It is there in the Bhagavad Gita. If you study Bhagavad Gita properly, you will know this. But we take great pressure. If I dress up as a priest and walk around, everyone will honor you, thinking that. It's such a misunderstanding about this thing called a priest. I don't know how it has happened. And now, in English, they call Brahmana as called as a priest. You say, Brahmana is not a priest. Brahma Janadi, the Brahmana's qualification, if you read in the Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam, and if you genuinely understand what a Brahmana is, you will feel sorry about calling him as a priest. Priest is one, because he is useless, can't do anything else properly, he doesn't have any realization, doesn't have any knowledge either, and who has made a livelihood out of the spiritual life to maintain his wife and family and the children, utilize that, he is the one whom we call it as priest. That is priest for in the Vedic system. But somehow or the other, this priest concept has walked in, and we start everything who has got, you will see these priests in all places. They completely mislead people. And people are also equally funny, that they get carried away by this, oh, he's a priest. I'm a Hindu priest now. Added to anything else, I got something special to offer you, that you can give me the dakshina what I was asking for. Because I'm a priest, recognized by the society. Not by knowledge, but recognized by the society. Society says, yes, you can collect money, be a priest, and do this. So that is how this priestlyhood has come. So ignorant about all these very basics of the philosophy and the spiritual life. And that is being carried away generation after generation, and it will get degraded further and further. It's not going to change for better. It's going to get degraded further. And more people will start thinking, well, if I can become a Hindu priest, it's not a bad thing. A few marriages a month, that's enough. Why I should go and work somewhere else? It's an easy way of making a few bob than doing all this. This head will work in that direction. All you have to do is you have to have a very nice clear tilak and a nice first class shikha and a nice Brahmin thread and presentable to others. That's all you require. Nothing else is needed. That's a priest. The priest conception. There's no word priest accepted in the Shastram as a one who has any spiritual knowledge. He has no spiritual knowledge. That is why he has gone to the priestly. Priestly job was given to them who couldn't do, who couldn't stay in. A Brahmana does not know how to ask from somebody. That is Brahmana's qualifications. If you study Bhagavad Gita, you will notice this in the 18th chapter. Brahmana means one who can tolerate every misery in this world and who will not ask anything from anyone under any circumstances. That is a Brahmana. Brahmana's quality, Krishna explains about that in the Bhagavad Gita as well as in the Srimad Bhagavatam. If you understand it that way, then you will know what a Brahmana's position means. That is what it means. That he will not ask under any... He does not know how to ask from anyone anything. Even if he has invited and offered something, he will refuse it. He will say that he will probably go only for one thing if he is invited, that is for chanting the Vedam. Because he has studied Vedam well. He can recite the Vedam. And if something is given, he will take it. If not, he won't even ask for it. If he has to starve, he will starve rather than asking something from anyone. That is Brahmana's greatest quality. And priest is exactly the opposite.
isn't it? If he doesn't get it, he won't leave you. He will hold on to you till you pay. That is priest. That is the difference. And unfortunately, we have misunderstood all these things. We are developing this culture strongly within the society, and that is very unfortunate, because you will never understand, get to know what the reality is behind everything, isn't it? So therefore, one who knows about the talk subject about the soul, he is Pandita. About Pandita. Knowing the soul is called Panditya. Panditya means knowing the soul. So the definition, Pandaha Alpavishaya Madhihi Esham Dehi Panditaha. Ajaya Swamiji's beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, he defined Pandita, who it is. So Alpavishaya Madhihi, that means he is always absorbed in the topic of the soul. In the topic of the soul, Pandaha Alpavishaya Madhihi Esham Dehi Panditaha. Such a person is called Pandita. But in the vyavaharam, in the business world, it all becomes different, isn't it? Pandit, everybody we call Pandit. Sometimes we say he is the guru of such and such a thing. We say like that, isn't it? You can say like that. You'll always see this in expressions like that. Oh, he's a guru of this particular topic. Yeah, anything like that. He's a guru in that particular field, in chemistry, or it's physics, or astrology, or anything like that. You say he's a guru in that. There is no guru in there. Guru is actually guru, if you use the word properly, it is not. But this is happens due to cultural, it gets converted from one culture to another culture, and the message in the process, the message gets lost. The message gets lost. So, whosoever intelligence, if it is addressed towards the soul, is always, Shraddha is on the soul. Whose Shraddha is always on the soul, and who is always conscious of or awareness of the soul's presence inside and the perfections inside, and who is situated in that state, he is a Pandita. He is a Pandita. They are Pandita. Not that one who has studied books is not a Pandita. Does not mean that you should not study books. That's not what it means. But just because you have studied books and intellectually mastered it, doesn't become you have become a Pandita. Only if it has come into your realizations, and after studying the books, you have thrown the books away, and all that is in the books has become experience inside, then you are a Pandita. Then you are a Pandita. So, in order to realize this truth, you can utilize the book. But realization must happen within yourself. Within yourself, that realization must happen. So, this realization business, or realizing the truth, is the purpose of satsanga. Is the purpose of satsanga. Realization is the goal of satsanga. Realization is the goal of satsanga. Books you can study at home. You can utilize the books for that purpose. But satsangam is not for discussing a particular book or a particular verse, but only for realizing this topic, what is discussed in the books, in practical realization. If it happens, then that is called satsangam. So, we will stop there for a few minutes, and then we will continue afterwards.
चेतो दर्पणमर्जनं भवमहादावाग्निनिर्वापणं श्रेयकैदवचन्द्रिका विदरणं विद्यावधु जीवनम् आनन्दाम्बुदिवर्धनं प्रतिपदं पूर्णामृतास्वादनं सर्वाप्नासुभनं परं विजयदे श्रीकृष्णसङ्कीर्तनम् नाम्नामकारि बहुधा निजसर्वशक्ति तत्रार्पिता नियमिता स्मरणेन काला एतादृशी तव कृपा भगवन् ममापि दुर्दैवमीदृशमिहाजनि नानुरागाः तृणारपि शुनीचेन तरोरपि सहिष्णुना अमानिना मानदेन कीर्तनीय सदा हरिम् अन्दनं न जनं न सुन्दरीं कविदां वा जगदीशकामये Mama janmani janmani Ishwari bhavadat bhakti rahaituki tvai. Ayi nandatanu jakinkaram patitamam shame bhavambudo. Krupaya tava pada pangajastita duli sadrasham vichindaya. Nayanam galada shrudharaya vadanam gadgadaruddhaya gira. Pulager nijidam kada vabukada tavanama grahane bhavishyadi. Yugaidam nimeshena chakshusha pravishayidam shunyayidam jagal sarvam govinda virahe name. Ashleshya va padaradam pinashtumam adarshanam armahadam karyotuva yathatatava vidadadulambada matprananathastu naevana paraha. So, what we have spoken so far is just an introduction to this chapter. How the frame of mind, what I mean to say is how our way of looking at this chapter, how important it is. Now we'll go into this chapter, Kshetram Kshetrajna Vibhaga Yogam, the name of that chapter, isn't it? Something more to say. Before this chapter, in the 12th chapter, do you remember 12th chapter? Which we discussed before?
Yeah.
So, what was that chapter?
Bhakti Yoga.
Bhakti Yoga, isn't it? Bhakti Yoga we discussed there. And Krishna has spoken about the symptoms of the devotee there. Is it not? You remember? A lot of things Krishna spoke about a devotee. Who is a devotee? And after saying that, you can see one thing from that chapter. Bhakti, in terms of the language of Bhagavad Gita, means knowledge of the soul. Atmajnanam. That is bhakti. Deliberately, Krishna has done it that way. I'll tell you why that is. It has come out in that way. That when we say this to somebody, the knowledge of the soul is bhakti, most of the people will put the sword and say to you, what's gone wrong? They'll say to you. So, in many places, nowhere in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna has used the word bhakti in the context where we use bhakti, and not even given any hint in that direction, the way we use bhakti. Normally, what do we say when somebody is a devotee? One thing, he has got the right dress, then he has got the, he is following the four regulative principles, he is chanting Hare Krishna, he has got a shikha, tilak on, and he gets up early, go to Mangalarati or does Mangalarati at home, and all a lifestyle, in other words, isn't it? That is how we will generally indicate a devotee in that way. That means if he puts tilak, goes to temple, chants the holy name, and all these things. These things are there in the Bhagavadam, but they are not there in the Bhagavad Gita. In the Bhagavad Gita. Deliberately, Krishna has not spoken about that, because even the different emotions, what you experience as a devotee, isn't it? Devotees have different ecstasy, we say, ecstasy. We say, he's ecstatic, kirtan, we say. We say like that, isn't it? He had an ecstatic kirtan. And then we say, somebody has given an ecstatic class. We say like that, isn't it? In the temples, they say like this. Ecstatic kirtan, ecstatic class, ecstatic dance. So everything ecstatic. We make all this. Everything based on ecstasy, isn't it? Then none of them, Krishna has spoken about that in the Bhagavad Gita anywhere. You cannot look, you can look at yourself and find it. It has not been spoken anywhere. There is reason behind it. The reason is that external things often you can imitate, isn't it?
External things you can imitate. Sometimes you will see these people in the dance, for example, while dancing. Some people, the way they are dancing, if you see that, you will see things that they are really into it. That it is, they are feeling so ecstatic. And you start thinking, I'm not feeling any ecstasy like that. What am I supposed to do? He has come only yesterday and he is feeling, second day he is feeling so much ecstasy. And I've been around 40 years and I'm still not able to move my leg. I'm not feeling any feeling inside me. I'm not developing that. So what's wrong with me? You start thinking like that, isn't it? So this is where you have to look at it in a little serious way. So many things what you exhibit through ecstasy or through kirtan, like when you go, it shocks me sometimes, when you go on Harinam, some young boys and girls will join you from Soho Street or from the Oxford Street. And they have come to have a good time there. And they found somebody singing and dancing, they joined them straight away. And they start dancing straight away. It didn't take very long. They chant and they start dancing. And we start thinking, oh, these devotees must be very advanced. Suddenly they come such a short second time, they got the ecstasy. And suddenly feeling that, relishing that bhakti. So much bhakti they have got. And we, after so many years, we are still struggling with bhakti. There's nothing coming through. So all these things can happen. That's why. So that is why that imitation is possible on the external factors. It's not that they are all pure devotees, suddenly overnight they became in a few minutes by hearing the Harinam. No, it hasn't happened. They suddenly, for the moment, they found that it suits their modes of nature for the moment, so they took to it. But that imitation is possible for anyone, isn't it? One who wants to become a devotee like that. Of one who dressed nicely, suppose you are wearing all Tulsi Malas, Rudraksham and everything, and Tilak nicely dressed, all these things. So, and suppose you are second initiation, you had a thread also, and then suppose you are wearing a saffron dhoti also, and a danda in the hand, it is complete then, isn't it? So, that, such a bhakti, you can see, it is not causing any problem as such, but the difficulty is that anyone can do it. It is possible to imitate it. That is the difficulty. It is possible to imitate it, but in substance, it is not the same. And therefore, deliberately, Krishna didn't want to talk about it in the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna's Bhagavad Gita has only one thing to say to us. The bhakti, what we have to talk about, is inside. That is where it has to happen. So here so wherever you want to be respected or recognized, or if somebody wants to imitate it, you can do all these things. Therefore, instead of talking about the external symptoms, Krishna talked about the internal symptoms of bhakti in the Bhagavad Gita. Have you noticed that? Only the internal symptoms are spoken in the Bhagavad Gita. Okay, there is one word, one or two verses here and there, is touched and gone, about salsadadam kirtayan domam. That is a sadhana verse, it is. Yatandascha dradavrada namasyandascha mam bhaktiya nityayuktam upasade. In the 9th chapter, remember I mentioned that at that time, they are only sadhana verses for that. But that doesn't, and sadhana bhakti is not accept, even taken notice of bhakti. Proper bhakti is parabhakti, what comes after self-realization. That is proper bhakti, what Krishna talks about in the Shastra. Sadhana bhakti, Krishna won't even discuss about it. It's not a subject for Krishna to discuss, sadhana bhakti. Sadhana bhakti changes from one acharya to another acharya, and one place to another place it can change, and the way you practice your sadhana. That is variable. Parabhakti is after realization, and therefore it is the same. In everyone's realization, they are experiencing the same truth. So therefore it is different. So important thing here is, Krishna spoke about only the internal symptoms of a devotee. What is that? Adveshta sarva bhodayanam maitra karuna evacha നിർമ്മമോ നിരഹങ്കാര സുഖദുഃഖ സുഖക്ഷമി സമദുഃഖ സുഖക്ഷമി സന്തുഷ്ട സതതം യോഗി യഥാത്മാ ദൃഢനിശ്ചയ മൈ അർപ്പിത മനോബുദ്ധിർ യോമൽ ഭക്ത സമയപ്രിയ യസ്മാനോ ദ്വിജതേ ലോകോ ലോകാനോ ദ്വിജതേ ചയ ഹർഷം അമർഷം ഭയം ഉദ്വേഗം മുക്തോയ സജമേ പ്രിയ ലൈക്ക് ദാറ്റ് അബൌട്ട് 8 or 9 verses ഫ്രം 12 to 20 ഐ തിങ്ക് അബൌട്ട് 9 verses കൃഷ്ണ ഹാസ് സ്പോക്കൺ ആൻഡ് കൃഷ്ണ സൈസ് ഹീസ് എ ഡിവോട്ടി He says, he is a devotee. Mainly he says not to hate anyone and to remain in a friendly way towards everybody and always in a happy mood, peaceful state, shanti, and not to give pain to anyone under any circumstances, not to give any pain to anyone or create any kind of unhappiness to another person and even if the world turns against you, still not to hate that person. These are all symptoms of bhakti. That even if the world goes against you and creates aversion, still not to develop any ill feeling towards that person. So many qualities Krishna has spoken in that. Advaishta Sarvabhudanam onwards. Those verses in the 12th chapter. So, all of them is the symptoms of bhakti. Bhakti yogam symptoms Krishna has spoken. If you ask, can all this not be imitated? You can ask that question also. Isn't it? If you make it a success by imitation, then it will become a truth. But it won't become a truth. That is the problem. That imitation, that's got that problem. Isn't it? If you imitate that, it will become a truth one day. It has to become truth, but provided you are able to do it. But that is difficult. It will not stay as a imitation will not stand. Imitation will not stand. So, if you make that happen somehow in your life, all those qualifications Krishna has spoken about, then it can become the reality one day. Can become the. So, therefore, important thing Krishna mentions there, those qualities which are necessary internally, that Krishna has spoken in the Bhakti Yogam chapter. Not the external symptoms, only the internal symptoms. After saying that, Krishna says, when will that bhakti will develop? He answers that, when you come to know about yourself, about your realized self, then that bhakti will happen. In other words, Krishna says, in simple terms, bhakti generally refers to love. Priyam for somebody, isn't it? So when will that priyam come? Priyam will come when there is shanti inside. Shanti has to be there inside. Because priyam comes from atma, from the soul, isn't it? Priyam comes from the soul. An atma vastu. Atma vastu, priyam comes from atma. What is not atma is called anatma. An atma vastu, you will not find priyam. Priyam will not come from the anatma vastu. So, priyam, when it comes to some object, you know where it is coming from? It's coming from the atma, not from the object. We think the object is the reason for the object priyam is coming. Actually, priyam comes from the soul, from the atma. So, sometimes just like we say, I like such and such a person. I like him very much. But because we like that quality of liking, some love for someone, and that's why we say like that. But that experience of liking someone is not happening in the person. It is happening inside me. Remember, Gopi spoke about this to Krishna. That Gopika Gitam, that is what it is all talking about. Krishna is saying, Gopis are saying to Krishna, that you are inside me, and inside us, Gopis are saying, that പതിസുതാന്വയം ഭ്രാതൃബാന്ധവ അതിവിലംഗ്യതേൻ അച്യുതാഹ ഗതാഹ ദാറ്റ് അവർ ലവ് ഫോർ ദി ഹസ്ബൻഡ് ദ വൈഫ് ദ ചിൽഡ്രൻ ഓൾ ദാറ്റ് ബിക്കോസ് യു ആർ ഇൻസൈഡ് ഫ്രം യു ഇറ്റ് ഈസ് കമ്മിങ് ദെയർഫോർ യു ആർ ഫീലിംഗ് ദാറ്റ് ഫീലിംഗ് ടുവേർഡ്സ് ദം കൃഷ്ണ സിറ്റുവേറ്റഡ് അന്തര്യാമി ഇൻ ദ ഹസ്ബൻഡ് അന്തര്യാമി ഇൻ ദ വൈഫ് അന്തര്യാമി ഇൻ ദ ചിൽഡ്രൻ ഫ്രം ദാറ്റ് അന്തര്യാമി കംസ് ദാറ്റ് പ്രിയം Therefore, we are feeling that. And where is that experienced? It's experienced in me, not in the object. Experience is here, not in the object. Isn't it? Think about that. Experience, you suppose you like someone. You are thinking that the love is in the person. No. The experience of that love is inside you, where you are experiencing that, isn't it? Because it's dear to you, therefore you like that person. Husband loves the wife because husband loves himself. Wife loves the husband because wife loves herself. That's why wife loves the husband. Not that wife is liking the body or the form of the husband. That priyam comes from the wife to husband or from husband to wife because that priyam has come from the soul within, from the Atma. This is very important principle. Brihadaranyaka Upanishad talks about that. That Kartikeyani, the discussion between Maitreyi and Yajnavalkya Maharshi, it's all about this. Are Atma, where Atma is the source of every priyam. Priyam comes from the Atma. So here, here, that experience of that Atma or priyam is not in the person, it is experienced within me. So, more than anything, what that person has done for you, any help or any kind of attachment he has shown to you, more than that, within me, in the form of a priyam, that there is a experience of that that anubhavam within me, and there is a experience like that. Priyam can change from one person to another, isn't it? Some people you have more priyam towards someone, and another person you have less priyam. That also happens. But priyam comes from within. But place where it is experienced is the same within you, is it not? Within you, you are experiencing that. So, for example, we have talked about this before also. Sometimes little children, a grown-up person, he takes and kisses the child. Child is not feeling any happiness by your kissing him. Child feels that all that unshaven beard and everything is giving a pain for the child. Child is not feeling any happiness. You are feeling the happiness. You are feeling the happiness. So similarly, but still he will kiss the child because he is experiencing happiness. That priyam is inside him. So this happiness, it is a big topic, thing called happiness. When we are not understood what happiness is, we take it generally sensual happiness, everything based on the senses. Therefore, what Krishna has done in the 18th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, he gave a very strong lecture on sukham, happiness. I don't know whether you have noticed that. In the 18th chapter, when Krishna says, Arjuna, sukham, sukham you are talking about, he gave a very intense lecture on that. First, he classified sukham into three categories, sattvam, rajasa and tamasa. He says, happiness in the mode of goodness, happiness in the mode of passion, and happiness in the mode of ignorance. What it means. You see, we don't say, I am in the happiness in the mood of goodness now. Or I don't say I'm feeling happiness in the mood of passion. I'm just saying I'm happy. That's all I'll say. Isn't it? So, but Krishna says, that is a complete misunderstanding about sukham. This word sukham is such a misleading word, it causes problem. So therefore, what Krishna did, Krishna broke into three, and under three different examples, that so that you understand what actually sukham means. What actually sukham means. So sukham, this sukham comes from priyam. From priyam comes sukham. That is the next step, isn't it? First there is priyam, and from priyam comes sukham. From priyam comes sukham. And priyam comes from the soul. Priyam comes from the soul. So where does this priyam comes from? Priyam, Krishna is saying here, that paramapriyam, paramapremam, or that pure priyam, where that source, if we want to find out where that is coming from, it keeps trickling down from the Andaryami. Andaryami is the source where it is coming from. In Brihadaranyam, Yajnavalkya Maharshi says in detail about these two, Kartikeya, Maitreyi. And Maitreyi, that is a very interesting conversation, Brihadaranyam. That Maitreyi, Kartikeyani, two wives of Yajnavalkya Maharshi. Kartikeyani was given all his assets, material assets. Maitreyi said to Yajnavalkya Maharshi, if you are leaving everything and going away, you must have something more valuable than this. That's why you are going away, isn't it? So take me to that, what you have got, give that to me. That's when Yajnavalkya Maharshi talks to Maitreyi about this priyam, the source of the priyam. And there's a number of verses to explain that in the Brihadaranyaka. So he says here that priyam, when it is coming from Antaryami, when it is trickling down like that, in order that to happen, you have to know that vastu. Vastu means that Antaryami, you have to know about it, what it is. You have to know the Antaryami inside. Only then you can have bhakti. Otherwise, you cannot have bhakti. That is Krishna's Siddhanta in that 12th chapter. That means only bhakti is coming. Where is it coming from? And that you will only know it when you realize the self inside. Now, Krishna is saying there, that unless you know the Antaryami, that vastu inside, only then, otherwise bhakti cannot be there. There cannot be bhakti. For example, when you do sadhana bhakti, you are not doing out of love, are you? You are doing it because somebody told if you do it, this will happen one day. Therefore you are doing it. All sadhana bhakti. That is why you can see very ample proof is that if you are not paid, people leave straight away next day. So bhakti is finished. Bhakti is not something that will come and go like that. That's not bhakti. Proper bhakti as far as Krishna is concerned. That is vyavaharam it is. That's vyavaharam. So here you can see Krishna's definition of bhakti in that 12th chapter. Is that what you have, where is priyam coming? Priyam is coming from Antaryami. And if you know the nature of that Antaryami, which means you realize the self, in other words, in that case, you will have bhakti. Once you have realized the self, you will have bhakti. That is Krishna's Siddhantam in the 12th chapter. That is why no external things were spoken. Everything in relationship with the internal symptoms were spoken in the Bhagavad Gita. Because in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna has condensed very much everything. But in the Bhagavadam, other things are also spoken. Even sadhana is spoken in many places. Sadhana bhakti. So when you study Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavadam, these changes you can observe in both the Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam. But people misunderstand in a different way. They say that, oh, Bhagavad Gita is the ABC, Bhagavatam is the post-graduation, and Charincharitamritam is the doctorate or post-graduation. Yeah. So like this, and then we have accepted it as it is. Like, that's not what it meant by that statement. All it's saying is that you will have different experiences in different ways it is presented in the Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam, Charitamritam. It's not saying, so suppose sometimes you'll say, if it is like that, my question will be, you're only doing post-graduation most of the time. You're not studying the graduation. Graduation and the other, the ABC, you are thrown it away. But you're straight away gone into post-graduation. how does that look? It doesn't look very logical, does it? So, first of all, even ABC you have not understood before you go into graduation and the post-graduation. So, you shouldn't look at it in that way. That is our conditioned mind is interpreting it like that. That's how it has happened like that. And that's why people start thinking, they'll say, no, I like Charitamrita. It will give you an impression that I'm always in the post-graduate studies. Isn't it? Basically, the problem is you have not had any graduation proper, nor you have the ABC. Because in Charitamrita, there's a lot of stories which you can easily read through and you will feel it easy to connect with it. Whereas the knowledge of the Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam is too subtle to know. Too much the Rishi's brain is behind it. Rishi's realizations, talking about great, great personalities behind it. So therefore, it is too sophisticated and too difficult to grasp it. And therefore, we throw it away and say, I'm going for post-graduation. How is that work? A postgraduate student is supposed to know what is studied in the graduation as well as in the ABC also. So if you think that Bhagavad Gita is ABC, and if you then a day will come when you finish this ABC business, then you can say you have got there somewhere. So but Krishna's point is that till you realize the self, even the bhakti what is spoken in the Bhagavad Gita, you can't understand. That is how sophisticated the whole thing is. So bhakti, two kinds of bhakti, sadhana bhakti and para bhakti. Para bhakti is what is discussed in the Bhagavad Gita. Sadhana bhakti, whatever we are doing, it's all accepted. Don't say that it's all rejected. No, sadhana bhakti is necessary. It is also accepted. Provided the goal is parabhakti. Most of the times who perform sadhana bhakti, 90-95% is for selfish reasons. That I got this problem in life, I got some other problems in life, if Krishna can just help me in my desire, to fulfill my desire. Sadhana bhakti is all centered around that, isn't it? Whereas parabhakti has nothing to do with all these things. So if you have that purity in your intentions in the sadhana bhakti, and if you are worshipping a deity, and if you are chanting the holy name, performing Harinam, Sankirtanam, everything, and bhajans or upasana, everything is necessary for that. For sadhana bhakti, it is necessary. That means deity worship, chanting the holy name, and Harinam, and bhajans, and upasanas, all other kinds of upasanas, all of it is necessary, and only then you can do. That will only help you for your chitta shuddhi. It will purify your subtle body, purification inside. You remember, Krishna says purification of one's own existence. In the Bhagavad Gita, there is a word there. Isn't it? Purification. Abhaya sattva samshuddhi. It is called sattva samshuddhi. Abhayam sattva samshuddhi jnana yoga vyavasthiti. I think it comes in later on in this chapter. That sattva samshuddhi is what happens with sadhana bhakti. You purify yourself. Purification of one's own existence. That is sadhana bhakti. You are purifying. Because if you purify, what will happen is, this knowledge will enter very easily inside. You free yourself from the grip of the mind, and the grip of the intelligence, and the grip of the ego. You will get released from all that, and you will become purified. That is the benefit of the sadhana bhakti. So it will help you to become free from this grip of all these things, and little by little the mind will become very focused. It will not give you trouble anymore. But at some point in time in that process, inside yourself, what will happen is the vastu whom you are giving attention to, for the deity or for the form which you are giving, upasana murti it is called, your attention will go away from that upasana murti and it will fall on the person who is worshipping. Attention will fall on that. From the murti whom you are worshipping, upasana murti, from there your attention will start coming back to who is worshipping that murti. When that happens, that is what it says here. So, that Nedam yadidam upasate. Upanishad says, Nedam yadidam. Because ultimately, Krishna does not sitting there thinking that, has he done the arati for me? Has he done this deity worship? He is helping you with his form to come to self-realize, to realize the self. Not that Krishna is saying, has he chanted all the rounds, what he is meant to chant? Has he done all the other deity worship? If that is how we are approaching this, isn't it? No, it is not like that. Idea is, behind all this deity worship, all the sadhana process, everything is ultimately, one day you have to start looking inwards and start thinking, who is doing all these things? That means, instead of the murti whom you are worshipping, the attention goes from the upasana murti to the person who is performing upasana inside. That is where spiritual life begins. Because Krishna is saying, after realizing the self, there is bhakti. And that is parabhakti. That is what is discussed in the Bhagavad Gita. You know very well, Brahma Bhuta Prasanna Alma Na Shochadi Na Kamkshadi Samasarveshu Bhudeshu Mad Bhaktim Lebhade Param. Isn't it? And what is the verse after that? Very next verse. Tameva Sharanam Gacha. No. After that, bhaktyamam yavan yaschasmi tattvada tatomam tattvado jnatva vishade tadanandaram. See how those two verses Krishna has kept it together. First he spoke about Brahmabuddha stage, realization, self-realization, in other words, Brahmabuddha, self-realization. Then at that stage what will happen? Na shochadi na kamkshadi. And then what else? Samam sarveshu bhudeshu. Seeing that same manifestation, Krishna's manifestation inside, in all other living beings. At that stage you have a bhakti. And that is the bhakti Krishna is talking about. And that bhakti is, bhaktyamam abhijanadi. Krishna says, with that bhakti you will know me properly. Yavan yaschasmi tattvada. You have known the tattvam very well at that stage. Tatomam tattvado jnatva. Once you have known that tattvam properly, vishade tadanandaram, you enter into me. In other words, you have become one with that truth. You become one with that truth. So those two verses in the Bhagavad Gita, in the 18th chapter, that is the indication to that bhakti what Krishna has spoken in the 12th chapter. Krishna has spoken in the 12th chapter. So that is another important thing. So when the attention falls away, Upanishads will take you to a much higher level. All other, for example, Puranams and all that, they will talk to you about bhakti in another level. That you have to understand, to encourage you in the sadhana process, and to take shelter of a deity, and to surrender to them, to make you more, to freedom from the false ego. For helping you that, upasana sadhana bhakti is necessary. At least during that time, you won't do anything wrong things. If you are doing sadhana, isn't it? At least at that time. All other times is all vikarmam. Whatever we are doing is vikarmam. So at least at that time you will be free from vikarmam. So here, after coming to this state, Krishna says, you will start asking questions. Who am I? What's my identity? That is when self-realization is developing inside a person. But if you whole lifetime, if you are busy with the deity worship, without any of these questions inside, what has happened? What has changed? Whole life, if that means, if you are not asking this question after doing the deity worship for a long period of time, that means there's somewhere something wrong. It is meant to take you to this stage to inquire about yourself. Who am I? That question has to come from within. And these sadhana processes are only to help you to generate that question from inside. If the question is not coming up from inside or in the form of some inquiry of the self, then that means that you are stuck somewhere on the line. Somewhere you are stuck on the line. So that is most important thing. That is why Upanishad says to us, Nedam yadidam upasate. Upanishad says to one person who is executing sadhana, Ya chakshusha na pashyati. Ya chakshusha na pashyati. He says, Ya chakshusha na pashyati. He says, what you cannot see with the eyes. That thing, what you cannot see with the eyes, but you are able to see something by whose presence? You cannot see that thing, but by whose presence you can see. Right? And that thing, that is Bhagavan, that is Brahman. That is how Upanishad puts it to us. Upanishad's way is a little different. That he says there, Vastu you cannot see with your eyes. This is a little different understanding, isn't it? Normally what do? We go to the temple, Krishna is there in the temple, we pay our obeisances and we chant the holy name, engage in kirtanam, engage in prasadam, and as we say we are associated with the devotees now. We have done everything what we have been told. And then we think that we are making progress. We think we are making progress. But what Upanishad is saying to us, that vastu you are looking for, you cannot see with the eyes. But by whose presence eyes are able to see, that is that vastu you are looking for. Actually, only when your inquiry goes in that direction, Nedam yaditam upasate. Upanishad's words are like that. The vastu whom you are performing upasana, for example, that form or whatever that you are worshipping, that is not the vastu what you are actually searching after. Because within you, who is performing that upasana, that worship, within you, there is someone there who is shifting your attention from the object you are worshipping towards you, towards your real you, the real you. You see, initially, we have a form to worship. We have a form to worship. You are worshipping that form. But in due course, you will know that
within yourself there is a person who is shifting your attention from the object which you are worshipping towards yourself, that reality inside you. That reality inside you. This is the reason why when they divided devotees into three categories, you remember? That last type is the one who is worshipping in the temple. Archaya meva haraye. It is not rejected, it is necessary. In the beginning it is necessary. But eventually, if it is not, leads into madhyamam and uttamam stage, the best one, where every time, for always, you are conscious of the presence of Antaryami inside, and then that perfection is the one, what is the final goal. So, at that point you can say that Purna Vastu is Krishna. That Krishna who is presence inside and realize him within yourself, within your own heart, then Krishna calls that as Brahma Bodham stage. Brahma Bodha Prasanna Atma Na Shochati Na Kamshati Sama Sarveshu Bhudeshu Mad Bhaktim Labhade Param. There Krishna is talking as Antaryami inside. And then he says, Bhaktiyamam, only by that bhakti, Abhijanadi Yavan Yaschasmi Tatvada Tatomam Tatvado Jnatva Vishade Tadanandaram. Afterwards you enter into me. So it is after Brahma Buddha stage bhakti comes. After Brahma Buddha stage. And that is what Krishna is saying in the 18th chapter, isn't it? So in other words, the bhakti is a experience of self-realization. Bhakti is an experience of self-realization. So, after talking about this bhakti in the last chapter, in this 13th chapter, Krishna is directing us towards self-realization step by step to that process and is opening up that. That is how this chapter begins. After talking about bhakti in the last chapter, so you see how Bhagavad Gita is. If you read, thinking that Bhagavad Gita from first chapter to 18th chapter is a gradual development. No, it is not. He spoke about bhakti and self-realization in the last chapter. And in the 12th chapter, Krishna spoke about the bhakti process. But that bhakti process is the one what happens after the Brahma Buddha realization spoken in the 18th chapter. And in the 13th chapter, he starts again talking about, that is why, because this knowledge of the self-realization process is like that, that is why you will see every time Arjuna asks a question, Krishna starts something else. No connection between the two. Because Krishna's problem is that Arjuna is like us, isn't it? He wants an answer for the question. And he wants in a systematic way. Like a course or seminar, he's asking. Krishna is saying there is no course and seminar here. Either you get it or you don't get it. That's all. And so therefore, different aspects of self-realization is discussed in Bhagavad Gita at different places. When he started Bhagavad Gita, Krishna spoke about the final goal straight away. Is it not? In the second chapter, that's what he's saying. And he spoke about the truth, very plain truth. And finally said, Esham Brahmi Siddhi Partha. If you come to this stage, then you may ask the question, why study further? Everything is in the second chapter. Yes. If you can realize the second chapter, that's fine. But because it is not possible to do it, it has to be expanded, spoken. And then Arjuna asks some question. Krishna, sensing the difficulty, explains certain things. But it is never answer to the question. It's never like that. So here also you can see Arjuna's question, how it begins and how Krishna's answers begin. There will be no connection between the question and the answer. And someone who is used to studying books in a particular way, he'll find that very difficult to follow this process. But that is Krishna's process. So Krishna says here that after talking about bhakti, and when that bhakti comes, he has spoken in the 18th chapter, he says it will happen after self-realization, whereas he has already spoken about bhakti prior to that. Suppose we were writing Bhagavad Gita after all these things. We would have spoken of bhakti is the highest, isn't it? So that should be spoken as the last one. The last chapter should be bhakti. But instead, Krishna has put it in this way. So therefore,
because he is opening up for self-realization from this chapter onwards, Krishna gave the title as Kshetra Kshetrajna Vibhaga Yoga. How to break up the field and the knower of the field. Atma and the body. Dehi and Deham. Breaking up. How to break it up first? Breaking up is necessary, isn't it? So far, whatever we have heard, we have understood that there is a thing called a Dehi. Soul inside. But now, Krishna is going to break it up very precisely between this and that. Asat and Sat. He has done it in different ways in different times. Previously also. In the second chapter, Sat and Asat, he has spoken like that. Seventh chapter, he spoke as Parapragrati, Aparapragrati. In two different ways. Again the same thing. And now, he is going to break it up again as Kshetram and Kshetrajna. Everything same. Knowledge is always the same. It will never change. But sometimes it will click somewhere. If it has not clicked as Sat Asat, it may click as Para Para Prakriti. If it hasn't clicked there, it may click as Kshetram Kshetrajnam Vibhaga Yogam. So that is why Kshetram Kshetrajnam, that breaking up, separation thing is what is discussed there. And Kshetram means which has got Kshayam. Kshayam means when it gets destroyed. Something that gets destroyed is called a Kshetram. Kshayam. Whichever happens Kshayam, it is called a Kshetram. Body gets destroyed. Therefore, it is called a Kshetram. Therefore, it is called a Kshetram. Another aspect of Kshetram is, it is subject to change. Continuously changing. Parinamam will develop. So, parinamam will develop and therefore, slowly it happens and therefore it is called Kshetram. So, going further than now, what does that mean? What is spiritual life means? Spiritual life means experience the anubhuti or Krishna. Anubhuti of Krishna. If all other things, Kshetram helps for that, it's fine. If Kshetram doesn't help, no to worry about it. Leave the Kshetram behind or the body behind. Don't worry about it. That is the Krishna's point here. That this Kshetra Kshetrajna Vibhaga Yogam is spoken in such a way, all your attention is falling on the Kshetrajna inside. And if Kshetram helps you for that, fine. If Kshetram is not helping, leave it behind. Somehow or the other, the goal is to get the attention towards the Kshetrajna inside. Kshetrajna inside. So, that otherwise it's all useless, studying this body. You remember in Bhagavad Gita, there is no discussion about body. Have you noticed that? There is no discussion about body. There is no other scripture in the world who is so focused on the soul like Bhagavad Gita is. So many scriptures in the world, but so focused on the soul and so straightforward, spoken about it with full conviction and realization is Krishna's Bhagavad Gita. There is no other text like this. So, therefore, that anubhuti of that truth inside Kshetrajnam, that is called spiritual life. Adhyatma jivitam, or spiritual life is that. Atma anubhuti, atma sakshalkaram, these are all different words for that. So, this is the same question one has to ask oneself. How can I get it? How can I get it? How will I find out the truth? Because Krishna has spoken that, that is the truth. There is no other truth in this world, he has spoken like that, isn't it? So, from this definition of these things, what Krishna has spoken, you can see there's only very few people in this world who are serious in spiritual life. There's only very few, isn't it? There's only very few people in this world who are very seriously inquiring about the truth. Seriously inquiring about the truth. So, otherwise, most of the people are generally satisfied. Let me understand something. Or let me hear some story. Oh, that's a nice story, you'll say. People say like that, isn't it? So, their attention will fall onto such things. That is why, you remember in the Kathopanishad, what did Krishna, what did Nachiketa say? Ascharya valta kushalasya labdha. And Ascharya jnada Kushalani Shishta. While talking about the soul, it's the most amazing thing. If one says he has got it, that's the most amazing thing, he says. And Ashcharya Jnada Kushalanu Shishtaha. If you have got it from someone who was able to get it from someone who has got it, that's also most amazing. Two things he has said there, isn't it? If somebody has got it, that is an amazing thing. And if he says, I've got it from someone who has got it, that's also amazing. That means proper spiritual life has happened there. That's what it means. It's an important thing to know that is in spiritual life it is. Kathopanishad says there that one, Kathopanishad says, properly one who has known the truth, experienced the truth, and is speaking the truth, that is an amazing experience. To hear from a realized soul, in other words. That's an amazing experience. Because by his very presence itself, it will directly send him to the heart, straight away. So one who has realized the truth and speaking from the platform of the realization, that is an amazing thing. And secondly, one who is hearing that in exactly the same way and experiencing it, that is also an amazing thing. That means when the proper satsangam happens, that if that proper transmission happens and properly if it is realized, that's the most amazing thing. So, in order to experience the truth, experiencing truth means experiencing Krishna, and there can be only that goal in life. There can't have many other goals. That is why in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna mentions that. Vyavasayalpamiya buddhi egeha kurunandana. Only if that goal is there, this will happen one day. And all other things will leave you behind. Other things has to leave you if you want to go in that direction. Or otherwise you have to lose them. If they don't leave you, you have to lose them. So, because no other anubhuti is permanent. No other anubhuti is permanent. For example, if you are hungry, you have a feast and the hunger will go. But after some time again you will feel hungry. You want another feast after that. That is the nature of the other things in this world, isn't it? So, but every bhogam, sense enjoyment is like that in this world. So many desires to enjoy different kinds of sense enjoyment. So while you are experiencing that, you will get some happiness. After that, some distress also. Prakriti is like that. She will always give you sukham with a little bit, mixed with some distress after that. So just like you feeling sleepy, and you will sleep for some time, and after some time the sleep will go. Sleep will go home. So all those things are not in your control, isn't it? When you come feeling sleepy, Prakriti says, now you sleep. You have to sleep. Yadevi sarvabhudeshu nidrarupena samstita. So go to nidra. That is no choice there. So that is all not in our control. They are Prakriti dharmam. Prakriti's dharmam, that is. That means material nature is engaging us in all that. Which one? Hunger. Kshudharubena samstita, hunger. Prakriti says, you have to eat some food from inside. She creates that hunger inside. Then you run for prasadam. Then Prakriti says, you should sleep now. You have no choice. Wherever you get a flying place to put your head out, you go and sleep. This is all in the Prakriti. These things are not in you. This is all in the Prakriti. So, it is the subject what we are going to talk from now on. It's very praudham. Praudham means it's a very subtle subject, and at the same time, if you get it, it's good, but it's not for understanding. Again, it's not for understanding. Because this thing what we are going to talk about, this is already there inside. This is the problem. It's already there inside. Only thing, we are not conscious of it, that the presence inside. So if you somehow the attention falls onto that subject inside, possibly it is possible that by the time you finish this chapter, that at least sometime in your effort, even for a second, your attention may fall on that object, may fall on the object. And if it happens, you have studied the chapter well. You got the chapters, the purpose of the chapter. Otherwise, to study 35 verses in this chapter is not so difficult. You can remember all the, memorize all the verses and repeat it, translation, purport, everything. That is all there. But if you have experienced it for even for a few seconds of this truth, what Krishna has spoken, that means you got it. You got it. Not otherwise. Not otherwise.
So here, so, and it doesn't require a lot of sadhana or a lot of effort either, because that's the nature of Jnanamargam. It's not based on your effort. So, and doesn't require a lot of intelligence either, in the sense what we say intelligence, isn't it? So Krishna says, keeping our auspiciousness as the goal, ultimately as the goal, only why, that is why Krishna is saying like this. And therefore, you should not think when we are discussing this chapter, it is boring. If you start thinking like that, it will be, you will immediately go away from this. Because this chapter, from the mental level, if you look at it, it is boring. So that's why it won't stimulate you very much, spirit, in the mental side. So keep your mind apart and listen. And then it may, if it happens anything, that's your... As I mentioned in the beginning itself, that what Bhagavad Gita does to us, Bhagavad Gita makes us aware, little by little, after hearing Bhagavad Gita, you come out from the grip of that mind, grip of the body, and grip of the intelligence. And you start seeing another dimension in life, out of this body, mind, and intelligence. And that is what is the preparation for spiritual life. That is where it begins. Because one who is totally absorbed in the body, what spiritual life can he have? It's not possible to have any spiritual life when you're completely absorbed in the body, isn't it? So freeing yourself from the body, mind, intelligence is important. And when that happens, you will know yourself that over a period of time, I'm experiencing that change within. You will know that yourself. Nobody has to tell you that, like a feast it is. Within itself, you'll experience that feast. And here, what Krishna is saying is that because this is more towards that realization of the self, you'll find it more monotonous or boring because our mind will step in and start dragging you in another direction. So that is what he says here. So never to expect any kind of fun in this chapter. Will not make any jokes and to entertain people. All that is not there in this chapter, unfortunately. Nothing to joke about. And because by joking, Bhagavad Gita has become a complete nonsense. People have made a nonsense of Bhagavad Gita because of that way. So, do not expect anything in this chapter, which is in relation. It's a very, very serious subject that is being spoken. So, if people think that, how can I make it practical in my material life? Like, you know, how people are very good at that, isn't it? Bhagavad Gita for personality development, business management. And they on the website, they have put their customers who they are, Ernst & Young, and who are the others, you know, KPMG, and Goldman Sachs, these are the customers for Bhagavad Gita. Good thing, right? So we have gone out of the track completely. If you look at the website, you will see this. Our own devotees doing this. It's very sad. Very, very sad. That not able to value Bhagavad Gita properly. They say they are our customers when we are preaching to them how to become successful in your Goldman Sachs, and the success will come one day like our Lehman Brothers. That will be the success finally. What will happen? This is very sad it is. How you fall yourself into these traps in spiritual life. It's a typical example of that. And many people are misled in that way, process. They think that they are the only people who are the qualified for Bhagavad Gita. No, Bhagavad Gita, who is qualified? Krishna says that, isn't it? So unfortunately, our mind gets in. That's what I'm saying in this chapter. That's the difficulty. If you see here, that if you start thinking it will help me my management course, London School of Economics or Harvard or Cambridge or Stanmore and everything, it's going to help my studies there. Bhagavad Gita will help me for that. And if you are going in that direction, forget it. It's not going to help. This is only help you to know who you are. That's what the goal is. And that is what it is important. So if you understand this subject with its seriousness properly, with the seriousness properly, and not management
or how I can make a lot of money in my life and use this Bhagavad Gita to exploit others, to you abuse others. If you that way, if you come to Bhagavad Gita will cheat you at the end. But sometimes it is possible that you may succeed in abusing others, using this, exploiting others, using Bhagavad Gita, but you won't get to the goal at the end. So that is why Krishna says here, it will be like tying the carriage before the horse. Isn't it? There's an expression like that in English, isn't it? Tying the carriage before the horse. It will be like that. There's no point in tying the carriage before the horse. So you have to tie the carriage after the horse, behind the horse, isn't it? Not in front of the friend of the horse. So this is the science of Adhyatma Shastram. It is called Yoga Shastram. These are the names for it. Adhyatma Shastram, Yoga Shastram. What else? Brahmavidya. This is the names. So in order to have this to develop, you have to know yourself first. That's the first step in that. And Krishna is going to say this in a much more detailed way, that it is not difficult if you have these basics, clarity inside. That sometimes we will do such things, as I said before, that people think that because they are all highly qualified, educated with degrees and all other things, and they are also thinking that, well, let's have a look at it, what Krishna has got to say. If you come with that approach, it will not get in, because this demands a certain things from us, certain discipline from us. So the difficulty what we are experiencing is because we have understood so many other things. That is the problem. That's what is causing the problem. So, and those things, with a lot of effort, you have studied the other things. You have studied with a lot of efforts. And therefore, something what is much more easy, you're finding it difficult. This is also another habit in us. When we studied other things in the school and college, there were very difficult subjects sometimes to study, isn't it? Complicated topics. And you had to rack your brain all the time to get to know, and it has been very difficult. So some of them have managed to get it and they got through all that. Some of them couldn't get it, so you had to stop it at some point. So if you think like that, because that has created an impression in us that I have to work very hard to get it, like those subjects what we have studied in the university and all that. But it is not like that. This topic is not like that. Here, the main impediment is the mind. The mind does not get involved and start dictating its own. And sattugunam, absence of sattugunam. Sattugunam is present inside, because Krishna never said that you need a degree from Cambridge to understand Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says like that, sattval sanjayate jnanam. Sattum, Arjuna, sattugunam will develop jnanam inside. So it's a completely different direction we are going now. We are moving away from here. So, so I think we will stop now today. We will continue tomorrow. All glory to Srila Prabhupada.